is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. As y'all know, I am the conservative Latino, or a conservative Latino, and Sports Grumbling's founder is actually a libertarian, and he is my guest tonight. How you doing, Big John?
I'm doing fine, William, and I guess, you know, you must be hard up for guests, because all you had to do was pick up the phone, and amazingly enough, I was available.
You know, actually, it's election season. We've just been so busy, right, and I haven't been prioritizing my time well, but I could have literally had a show twice a week with different people just because that's how politics are,
right,
or is, you know? And that's actually why we decided to finally get you on. We've been talking about this back and forth, and we do follow the libertarian scene. For the audience out there, I'm not a libertarian, but just like literally every American, I have libertarian tendencies, and again, I firmly believe, because that's common sense, and that's the whole fundamentalism of libertarianism in terms of how I see it. But in saying that, when I say that's how I see it, I don't see a political ideology, I see a philosophy. And it's easy to have a solid infrastructure or base or whatever you want to call it of something that's common sense like that. The problem is there's something called real life and humanity and human nature and imperfection and everything like that. And from there, that's where you're, in my eyes, that's where political ideologies start to come in, and they take common sense and they don't twist it as much as they perceive it. One of the most important words I ever learned growing up was in front of the old man, the captain. It wasn't a good scene. And he explained to me, son, I need to tell you what, or do you know what perception is? And it's like, we all hear the word, but when you're young, you don't really understand it. You kind of know right. what it means, but you don't really understand it. And to the audience, what God was telling me, when I say God, his first name was Gordon, his last name was Dorsey, and O was his middle name. So being the commander of a naval warship, you know, God seemed to be an appropriate term. And he kind of laid it out to me, John, and said, well, perception is the truth in terms of how people see it. It's not the technical truth. It's not the true truth, but nobody knows what the true truth is but God, because she goes, Delpar, you're going to give your side here. The other person will give their side, and in the middle somewhere is the truth. And I've always believed that, because after he told me that, and I was in my mid-20s probably, I started looking at everything for years in that perspective, you know, and it helped me understand people better. It helped me get angry properly. It helped me have empathy properly, because even though I would look at it and perceive it my way, I would do my best to try to get to that middle ground, understanding right. the difference. And when you're a boss in the military, and this is a vastly different from being a boss in the civilian world, it's more of a militaristic, what I'm trying to say, more discipline, more you are the leader, you're the boss. How you say it, that goes a long way versus a civilian. Well, guys, come on in. Let's all talk about this, you right. know? So in my long-winded way, what I'm trying to say is perception, it's how we look at the world. And I look at the world through Republican and Democrat eyes, as that's one perception here, one perception here. And there's a libertarian truth in the middle. But again, that's a philosophy. It's not a political ideology. And I've said it a couple times now, because that makes libertarian politics no different or no better than Democrat or Republican. It's just another party out there, and people perceive how they view the world should be run their way. Because at the end of the day, it's easy to live a utopian fantasy, which everybody has, a conservative, a libertarian, and a Democrat. You know, the libertarian's perfect utopian fantasy is government rules us all benevolently. You know, conservatism is we're all working hard, we have faith in God. And libertarianism is leave me the fuck alone, is pretty much what it boils down to. You know, excuse my French, but I said it like that purposely, because that's kind of what I've gotten. Nobody has ever said it to me in that tone. Nobody has ever said like, this. No, but by the time you're through talking to them, they could be the nicest guy. But that's kind of the tone of their mentality with that belief. Now, Big John, I just took a good chunk of time. The reason I wanted to talk to you is there's a couple issues to talk about. But what are your initial thoughts in the difference, or is there any difference in libertarian philosophy versus libertarian politics?
Oh, there's a big difference. And I think much like in say, Democrat and Republican circles, you have the same thing. It's just that in terms of Democrats and Republicans, it's much more finely refined. Let me give you an example. Reagan, for example, when he, in his heyday, came out and said, what's the 11th commandment? Thou shalt not speak ill of any other Republican, right?
Yeah. That's about it. Yeah, you're right. It's a noble comment, but it's as realistic as, I don't know.
No, but I'm saying he said that, and back when he was running and when he was in office, it was pretty much he kind of enforced it, right?
Yeah, for a few years, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
But who was the philosophical drivers of the Reagan Revolution? It was William F. Buckley. Milton Friedman, right? So you had guys like that who were like, we'll provide the ideals. Now, you, acolytes, political operatives, go make it happen. And it's no different in the libertarian world. You have libertarian thinkers who would never, ever run for office, get involved in local politics, and things of that nature. And in my opinion, that's fine. Because you do need those North Stars to remind you of what you're running for.
Right. And for the audience, that's where part of our discussion is going to be. Because my issue is, hey, you don't want to get involved, stay the bleep out. And in today's day and age, that's kind of like an impossibility with social media, the internet. Everybody has their 2 cents.
Yeah.
So I apologize, but go on. But that's going to be a thorn.
Yeah. And you know, folks who are watching your show right now, William, if they follow us on any social media platform, they might think that the Sports Grumbling, say, Twitter feed or Gab feed is schizophrenic.
Yeah, I think
right? And there's a good reason for that, folks. Half those tweets are William's brainchilds, half of them are mine, or whatever the ratio works out to be. So
and you can always tell the difference.
Yeah.
Tweets. Yours are very philosophical. Mine are very cutthroat.
Yeah. And actually that's the crux of our, you know, listen folks, if there's one thing you can take away from this show, from this episode, it's going to be how two people with different political philosophies, with different allegiances, can hash things out and still be friends and still run a business together. Because William and I, at the end of the day, we understand we're talking. We're trying to hash things out. We're trying to figure things out.
But you know, John, I think you're right and you're wrong. I think you're wrong because we get along and we're going to lead this conversation as we entered it because we both have the same end goal. We just, as corny as it sounds, we just want what's best for humanity, for our fellow brothers, our kids, our family. And your vehicle is libertarianism. My vehicle is conservatism. And my point being is I just think it's that end goal that we both desire out of life, whether it's for your son or whether it's for my relatives or whatnot. It's I want to be treated as I would treat, or I want people to treat me as I would treat them, you know? And I think it's a similar philosophy.
Well, you see, I'll give you an example. You just stated the golden rule. Treat others as you would like to be treated yourself, right?
Yeah,
you just
stated the golden rule. Have them do it to you.
Right. The libertarian version of the golden rule is treat others as they would like to be treated. Right? Because what I like isn't what you like. And the classic hacky joke about that is, what if you're a masochist? Right?
I was an ex-sailor, and boy, did I run into different
types of people. So if you're a masochist, if you apply your golden rule, if I'm a masochist, then I would go around punching people because I would assume that's what they like.
But that's taking it literally. So for
example, of course,
rule is more empathy, human nature.
I got you. But
how many times do you get mad as a kid?
Mm-hmm.
Buddy would come up to greet you, and he'd punch you in the arm.
No, I got you. But it serves a purpose, you know, because and the purpose, even though it's a hack joke and it's a hack comparison, it shows like the differences between conservatism and libertarianism. And a lot of people, and honestly, I don't know where this perception came from. A lot of people think that if it weren't for the Libertarian Party, for example, all libertarians would be Republicans.
Yeah. You know, I grew up kind of thinking that, but I think because at the end of the day, progressives tend to go more eventually. It always happens. They tend to end up the socialists, the communists. And I think that differs so far from libertarian. It's not that you guys align with conservatives as much as if you had to pick two sides outside of open borders, I would see more libertarians shifting to the Republican side versus the Democrat side. But as I've learned from you, there's a lot of leftists out there. And the open border ones was really one that caught my eye because it made me start to think that you're in the minority as somebody who doesn't believe in open borders in the libertarian side. That's the impression I get, you know?
No. Yeah, I know you might think that. It's just who's any. So, like, for example, let me give you my own story and you'll see what I mean. I was not always a libertarian. As a young man, I was a conservative. As a young man growing up in New York, and if you watch my interview show with a lot of libertarians, I fully admit to this. I came to libertarianism from the right. I was a conservative. I was a big William F. Buckley fan. I was a big...
You were a fundamental conservative.
Well, I love... So, if you haven't noticed, I gravitate more to the philosophical and the intellectual. I don't gravitate to the down and dirty, political, like, fisticuffs type of thing. That's not my thing. I never ran for, like, student body president or treasurer or any of that.
I was vice president in college.
Yeah, see, I never ever had any interest in that. What I did have interest in was shaping people's opinions and shaping people's beliefs. So someone like a William F. Buckley, who actually did run for mayor of New York, I think, in 1968.
He quickly realized it wasn't his shtick.
Well, he actually won a nice chunk of the vote for a third-party candidate. But regardless, Buckley, to me, was the great example of an intellectual. He started National Review. He was a former CIA operative. He wrote several fiction books. To me, he was guy. And honestly, I got the opportunity to meet him. I got the opportunity to correspond with him. One day I'll show you. I've got letters that I've saved from 30 years ago.
We just scan them and post them online.
Yeah.
There's people out there, correct me because you knew him.
Yeah.
But he sounds like a larger-than-life figure. He sounds like you'd make a movie about him. You know,
oh, absolutely. He was and he was a little bit eccentric in the sense that he had his quirks about him. Like his accent that a lot of people assumed is a Tony accent is really a mix of New England, Mexican, because I think he was a native Hispanic speaker. I'm not 100% sure, but I think, you know, he had that in his background. But when you read things about him, like every morning he had the same thing for breakfast, cashew butter on toast. And,
oh, wow.
You know, and you could always find him at his favorite Italian restaurant in New York near the offices of National Review. It used to be, it's not there anymore, but it was Nicola Paone's. It used to be like you could find him there every Wednesday, I think, or something like that. He was a creature of habit. He was very eccentric, but he was brilliant, and he could challenge you in a lot of ways. He had streaks of libertarianism in him, but I wouldn't call him a libertarian.
Right. But he wasn't the only one, though.
No. Yeah. Another guy I thought was very much a true conservative / libertarian back when the term libertarian didn't exist was Barry Goldwater.
Hold on. When did the term libertarian start to come into? I assume it's been around since for a couple hundred years or as long as the party has.
Well, the party started in 1972. So in 1972 was formed by David Nolan as a political party. Prior to that, what we now call a libertarian was actually called the liberal.
Oh, yeah, the classical liberal.
Well, we call them classical liberals now to distinguish them from the liberal socialists right now.
Right.
But, for example, when Milton Friedman was going to Rutgers University as an undergraduate, if you believed what libertarians believe, meaning individuals over the state, things like that, you were considered a liberal, a libertine. That's what you were called.
A libertine, that's something sailors aspire to.
Right.
It sounds like you have a different meaning there.
Well, it's sort of the same. It just meant that you believed in individuals, you believed in your own autonomy, and volunteerism. That was something that really was always in the liberal tradition.
Yeah, I've heard it that way, but why am I thinking a dark person who just parties, does drugs, all that?
Well, you're thinking of a libertine the way it's usually portrayed in the movies, which is, okay, you know, like Dangerous Liaisons, for example, was a movie where they were all libertines, John Malkovich and a young, what's her name?
My standard days. We were all I apologize. So you went from Buckley, who you actually had correspondence with, to
Goldwater.
Goldwater. John, explain to us, because even I always forget because it's so long ago. Goldwater's a conservative. Goldwater's extremely famous for two things. One, running for president and getting shellacked, but also being one of the very few politicians who was a regular in Dean Martin's comedy roast.
Well, yeah. He seemed to have, he used to be able to laugh at himself, which I thought was a very good quality. But he was also, actually, the thing he's most famous for probably is, you probably know his quote and you may not know it was him. He was the one who at the 1964 convention said, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, moderation in the pursuit of justice, no virtue. That was his line that he delivered. Now, the problem with Goldwater was he had, not the problem, but he had libertarian streaks. For example, he was the first one who said, I don't let gays in the military. And he was a former Air Force Reserve general, two-star general. So when he said it, it came from with a sense of gravitas. I don't care if – another famous quote, I don't care if they are straight as long as they can shoot straight. That was that one of his quotes. He also was pro-abortion. He thought it was nobody's business but the woman's. These were very anti-conservative Republican views. But in the sense of a true conservative who looked at limited government, those were in line with that concept.
Right. No, John, I struggle with that. As you know, I ran for office. I got elected locally, and I was once a future rising star very, very briefly in the local party here. But, I thought of running for office, and that everybody says, well, a friend of mine says, so what do you think when you run for office? How the hell do you get past the pro-choice, pro-life? I go, because I'm pro-life. The fundamentals will say I'm not pro-life because even though I want that baby to live, to survive, the mother to know every single option, my belief is that's her decision with her family, her priest. The only thing I would always interject in is I do believe that a father should have a voice, and society has completely excluded the father's voice from that process.
Yeah, and listen.
I get that. And back then, John, you're talking the early 60s, I would imagine that was that should have been a death knell for him politically, shouldn't it?
Well, I don't think he was espousing that in the 60s, but certainly when he made his comeback and got elected senator of Arizona again, he was definitely espousing it in the early 70s, throughout the 70s and 80s. And don't forget, he was basically the chairman of the Armed Services Committee throughout his tenure. So he held a very important position. Also, Goldwater, much like, say, Justin Amash 30, 40 years later, stood on principle. He was the first one who went to Nixon and said, if you don't resign, I'll make sure you get impeached. Oh, and he went and he said that to his own president, the president from his own party. And supposedly Nixon was going to go fighting. But when he walked in the room and he said Goldwater was waiting for him saying, Mr. President, stop lying, blah, 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 blah. And you know what pissed off Goldwater was the way Nixon hung Spiro Agnew out to dry.
Right. Wasn't it pretty much they went in and said, look, you don't have the votes? There wasn't even an argument. You don't have the votes.
Well, I think Nixon was quoted as saying at one point, he goes, once I lost Goldwater, I knew it was over.
And
that was it. So I applaud him on that. He put principle over party. So those were two guys that I look forward to. And then obviously Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, who was the product of Barry Goldwater's disastrous campaign. So people forget that. Barry Goldwater lost 49 states to Lyndon B. Johnson in 1964. Now, there's a good reason for that. It wasn't that people hated Goldwater. It was that Kennedy had just been assassinated. And Goldwater himself said, no one's voting for me. Nobody wants three presidents in 1 year. Nobody.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I don't remember that, but I remember it was the assassination that kind of derailed it from – I mean, it was doomed from the start. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't doomed from the start because, believe it or not, people don't realize
I'm sorry. Doomed from the moment Kennedy was assassinated.
Yeah, right. People forget. Why was Kennedy in Dallas that day he got shot?
Oh my God, you're right. I couldn't tell you that question. In fact, you know what? I've read that big old fat book on the conspiracy in the papers, and I can't even remember why he was in Dallas, and that's the whole crux of it all.
He was in Dallas specifically because his poll watchers told him, you're going to lose Texas, even with Lyndon B. Johnson. Mm. The Texans are starting to get behind Goldwater. You're going to lose Texas.
Okay.
And that would be an embarrassment on a national scale because his vice president was from Texas. So that's why he was in Dallas. So in some indirect way, Goldwater was responsible for Kennedy getting killed, I guess. But
he was in with the mob.
Right. But people forget. What happened was he went down in defeat, and then the Republican Party basically hardened around Goldwater's conservative principles. And that's where Reagan got his inspiration.
That took a while, though. That didn't take effect until the late 70s.
It literally took 20 years. And that's why I tell people, when you start a movement, you got to wait 20 years. You can't get everything done. Look, and I give the Goldwater-Reagan example. It's always been that example. So, but anyway,
Reagan himself had a long 20-plus year journey into becoming the conservative he became. And I think that's why, John, a lot of us relate to him because I believe it is true that protection, that anecdotal life we lead, in the sense when we're young and dumb and we want to save the world,
right?
You know, and then when we start paying our taxes, we become a bit more conservative, you know?
And
I think Reagan went through that process politically.
The thing about Reagan is, unlike Donald Trump, and I know you're not going to appreciate this, but Donald Trump switched from Democrat to Republican, and I couldn't tell you which of his policies changed over it. And I'm not talking about
actually, I do appreciate that. Why? Because it's the truth. Have I ever defended Trump in that sense? No.
No. I'm just saying
his actions and his results.
You're right.
As a president.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But Reagan, at least, when he switched parties and became the governor of California as a Republican, he could quote chapter and verse of conservative theory. He could,
But John, for the audience, what John is saying is there's nothing virtuoso about Trump. It's like he did it for political reasons.
Meaning, right. He did it just because it was the party.
No heart, no empathy. Right. It was cold and calculating, and he is absolutely correct in that sense.
Yeah.
We all knew. John and I used to be aligned on Trump, but then John stopped looking at the actual result of his actions as president, and I did. And that's why I became a Trump fan. And honestly, John, I think that's the greatest and fairest way to look at life. I'm going to judge you by your results, you know, because to me it's like – any other way, and you're not being truthful because we have to be partial to a certain way we look at it versus the actual data.
Well, it's a couple of things. It's not that I disagree with you wholly on that, but let me give you some examples. Like, so for example, you might wonder if I started out – and believe me, when I was into conservatism, I was a regular at CPAC in Washington.
I was joking, but you were pretty much a fundamentalist conservative, weren't you? Pro-life,
not fundamentalist.
Drugs. Weren't you president of the Nancy Reagan Say No to Drugs Club?
Maybe, but here's the thing: when you say fundamentalist, if you mean fundamentally conservative philosophy, yes. If there's any sort of religious tone to that,
to just a puritanical way, meaning. This, because in a sense, that's why I question my own conservatism. I'm a conservative. Don't get me wrong. That's the closest I align to. But I question in the sense I'm not that round hole trying to fit into the round
right, square
round
peg. Head. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's I struggle with various aspects of it. But I think that's also good. People who fall in line, hook, line, and sinker, those are the ones that get me nervous.
Well, and they should, because they tend to be true fundamentalists, true radicals. Now, here's the thing. And like, if I showed you some of my scrapbooks, I have pictures of me hanging out with Lee Atwater and discussing. If you remember who Lee Atwater was.
Lee Atwater was a bad human being. That was
a horrible man. He was a horrible man, we found out later, but he was a very effective political strategist.
He's brilliant. He was, in fact, the reason George H. Bush did not win a second term was because Lee Atwater had brain cancer
and died.
Yeah. Won his campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I mean, that's how brilliant he was. I mean, because I believe had he run that, Bush would have won because it would have been Clinton versus Clinton the Godfather and Lee Atwater.
You mean Papa Bush the second time around because he got him elected against Dukakis. But
I apologize. I'm talking about Bush Senior.
Yeah. So, but what back then? And I mean, I hung out with all of them, William. I hung out with Judge Bork after he got his nomination sat at a table next to him for 3 hours and talked legal theory. And I don't know jack about legal theory, but it was just so interesting talking to him, you know?
Right. And for the audience, Judge Bork was a Supreme Court nominee that Ted Kennedy flat out lied about.
It was a hatchet job. It was one of the first hatchet jobs.
That was when I began to question Democrats and aligning our politics is no different than Panamanian politics.
Yeah.
And I'm being serious because I'm like, I knew as a kid, he's lying. I mean, that's just, and then there's a kid growing up in Panama. I had dabbled in weed because you grow up with it. My whole other issue was like, it's just weed. You know, they're crucifying him over weed. Yeah.
Well, they crucified him about a lot of stuff, and it was a total hatchet job.
That was the selling point to the public, because everybody—it's to say no to drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Reagan who nominated him,
and it was there was a lot involved in that.
But anyway, I turned away from puritanical.
Right.
That's where you're at.
Yeah, and in the late '80s, during Reagan's second term, it really started to hit me that. Though the philosophy sounded good, the implementation of it allowed for too much that I didn't enjoy. For example,
conservatism.
You mean conservatism, right? Yeah. So, for example, I didn't like how they recruited religious types into their Reagan's big tent. Now,
right.
I'm not talking about the political advantages of that. Those are very clear, and they're very obvious for Republicans to this day.
You're talking philosophical.
I'm talking philosophically. For example, Edwin Meese launched a war on pornography. Overall limitations on free speech. They went after pornographers, not even just for their pictures, but for the words they said. The famous Supreme Court case that thankfully there were enough conservative judges who didn't bow to the politics. Scalia, for example, with Larry Flint, the famous Larry Flint versus the preacher of Falwell.
Right.
And they protected free speech. Thank God those guys had enough principles, Scalia and the rest.
And that's what you'll always get with conservative justices. That's why I tell people, if you're a conservative and you're pissed off the conservative justice, because it's probably followed the Constitution.
Yeah. But generally speaking, the realization came to me, that conservatives still wanted to tell people what to do and how to think. And the biggest thing for me was the free speech issue. See, now kids today will say, well, the ones who are against free speech right now are the leftists, right?
Right.
Maybe, but when we were coming up, William, it was the conservatives.
You are correct. John is absolutely correct. It was conservatives when we were kids, but there is no maybe. It's leftists today.
Yeah, it's largely is coming from the left. Absolutely.
That's a product of power, John. Whoever is in power. See, this is what I tell people in life. To know who's in power, look how the subtext goes. And in this case, it's the leftists who want to control because they control the media, because they control the press. Back in the 80s, before actually Reagan is a product of today's press, because he's the one who opened up that law that kind of had to give equal treatment to both parties. But back then, it was conservatives who controlled the media they control the way we thought, the way we saw things is what I'm trying to say. And I can't think of how they do it. You would naturally think the media, but they never controlled the media, but they were able to get their message out. And that's what I assume you're talking about in which you started to digress.
Yeah, no, I was saying that's what hit me was that it was really their approach towards free speech really hit me hard. Because I'm a free speech absolutist.
Was it their approach to free speech or the fact – what I'm saying is it's two different topics. They're both related and they both align and common sense dictates, well, one can't react without the other. But I never thought they were looking at it as free speech. I thought they were looking at it from that puritanical mindset. This is God's way. To me, it didn't have anything to do with free speech as much. We got to do what God's will is.
You might be right, but it was also the flag burning cases that conservatives were like, it should be a crime to burn a flag.
It should be too, but it's not. So I'm like,
yeah, and it should be.
I serve so you can burn it, but I do believe it should be a crime.
Right. So, and now you're seeing how these events that I mentioned all kind of conspire, right? So let's assume that it was a puritanical approach instead of a free speech approach. Well, why did they have to take that puritanical approach? Because they had to cultivate the religious right. They had to cultivate right. the so-called silent majority. So now right. you've got these things. Reagan initially didn't care about abortion as an issue. He had to adopt it to take care of the Southern Baptists, the born agains and things like that, and the religious folks. So you started to see this in the 80s around the Reagan coalition, the Blue Dog Democrats, the conservative Democrats that don't exist anymore for the most part. And I'm talking about guys like Sam Nunn from Georgia, Joe Lieberman from Connecticut. These were Democrats that by today's standards would be considered Republicans. The blue collar, the blue dog Democrats.
Yeah, so, and for the audience, those are where their philosophical beliefs is different from the conservatives, but they're so similar in terms of they want the exact same goal, you know, versus today where we have completely different ideologies within the two parties. Back right. then, it was the ideology was different, but the end result goal was always the same.
Right.
Creating a better America.
So when I started looking at that, I slowly said I'm not a conservative anymore because I don't believe in what they're saying.
What year was this then? I mean, how old were you approximately?
I might have been 25, 26, 27.
So still those formulated years.
Yeah, it was after college, after I'd been in the workplace for a little while. And I grew up on Wall Street professionally. So believe me, if there's ever been a libertarian environment, it's Wall Street. It's pure capitalism, especially if you work the commodities pit. There's no rules other than make money. That's it. And that's all there is to it.
So, one day you have to explain that, because when I see it in movies and just see a bunch of people with their hands up holding something, they're all screaming at the same time. To this day, I'm like, what the bleep are they doing? I mean, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't happen that way as much anymore because of computers, but yeah, you're right. And I can tell you stories about that, but I don't want to get too off topic. So that started to put ideas in my head. And then I have to admit, how did I become a libertarian? And I became first a philosophical libertarian without any initial understanding of the politics of it.
But, you're still a philosophical.
Well, and I still am, absolutely. And I don't make excuses for that. But like Milton Friedman, I had heard about him being an economic advisor to Reagan. Then I started reading things about how he was disappointed with Reagan in some ways. For example, the fact that Reagan did not stop the deficit spending in his second term by the Republicans in 1986 when they took over the Senate. Milton Friedman was super pissed at Reagan for that. And I'm like, well, why is he pissed at Reagan there? Let me read about it. For those that don't know, Milton Friedman was a libertarian. So Milton Friedman described himself as a small L libertarian, meaning he was a philosophical libertarian, and a big R Republican, meaning he voted Republican. So he's the first one who William, you may have liked, because he was a libertarian philosopher, but practically he voted Republican most of the time.
But see, that's just it, John. I don't care about that. I care what I heard him say. See, and that's what people confuse all the time. Well, I don't give a freaking rat's bleep about this or that in terms of your foundation. Sure, that's interesting conversation and good stuff to learn. But it's what you just said, Milton, on the Phil Donahue, that I, as a 12-year-old kid or whatever, 10-year-old, however old I was, I have never forgotten. Why? Because it sounds stupid, John, but I never forgot it because it's common sense in everything right. he said.
Well, that's why I tell people, if you – and I've had this discussion with – you know, I've interviewed a couple of different libertarians, Larry Sharp, Spike Cohen. I've had libertarian professors. I've had libertarian lawyers. I've had anarchist moms. And on my show, I ask them, like, I'll always ask them, what was one of the first things that turned you on to libertarianism? And I got to tell you, William, the common answer from everybody, no matter what type of libertarian they are, is Milton Friedman on the Donahue Show in 1979. Everyone points to that.
I stand corrected. Had I had a mentor or a friend, a libertarian, I could have been completely swayed. But, you know, even when – I mean, that was 12. Even at 20, I didn't know what a conservative was because I'd never heard that term either. Mm. So I thought I was a Republican, you know, and that's a story for another day. But the point is where did you get your influence per se? It was Buckley directly to be a conservative, but what – what it's like you ask your guests, well, what specifically happened at work, Wall Street, at home, or whatever, where you finally actually remember, oh my God, I may be a libertarian, or is that a libertarian thought, where you realize the tipping point? What story is that?
The tipping point was me coming to the realization in my own head that voting against someone never leads to good results.
Yeah. But that's how people vote. I mean, my whole life.
You asked what tipped me to the thing, right? So it was that.
But what happened? We want to hear the story. It's like, were you at the voting booth and what? I mean, happened?
What happened was, one day I was having a debate with a conservative, and he kept saying to me, like most conservatives do, like, and I saw it again in this last cycle, we got to vote for Trump because Biden is the worst candidate in history. That was 4 years after we got to vote for Trump because Clinton is the worst candidate in history, which was 4 years after twice saying we got to vote for Romney or we got to vote for McCain because Obama is the worst candidate in history.
And they were right on all of them.
And it comes into
perception.
Yeah, and it comes into my head. And so there was one point where someone said, we have to vote for Bush because Clinton is the worst candidate in history. And I remember sitting there saying, I've heard that before. And guess what? In my mind, as I look at what I hold dear, which was economic freedom, personal freedom, freedom of speech, I noticed that the goalposts kept moving. What used to even be called a conservative back in my day would be a moderate. What used to be called a moderate is now a socialist. What used to be called a socialist is now like a complete, crazy rioting person.
Right. How many times do we hear this person today would be seen as a far right or far left type person?
And so I came to the realization that that was the result of millions of people voting against someone rather than for someone. And that realization came to me when the Mitt Romney – so I had stopped voting with McCain Obama because I looked at McCain and I said, I don't want him. I looked at Obama and said, I certainly don't want him. So I didn't vote that cycle. Then when I got to Romney and Obama, I said to myself, you know what? There's got to be something else. On principle alone, I got to vote for someone. And that's when I found out about Gary Johnson.
Well, okay, so that was then, but wasn't there, I mean, you were closer to age, and the reason, I would imagine it had to have been a race sooner than that. I mean, because I never voted against anybody until Dole Clinton. You know, I voted for Bush because I thought it was Reagan. But Bush first opened my eyes as to how quickly politics can turn. Because 18 months earlier, he had some of the highest approval ratings in the history of the presidency. And 18 months later, all I could remember was read my lips. No new taxes.
No new taxes,
Yeah, and that was the first time I didn't want Clinton, but I didn't care for Bush. And it just got worse then. And Romney was the person whom now if you're not a conservative with my values, I will 90% of the time just leave it blank. The reason I say 90% is because on principle, Big John is right. The lesser of two evils never brings anything good. But that's in the utopian fantasy. The reality of it is, you know – It's kind of like, it's a terrible comparison, but it's like, okay, the terrible two evils, who would you rather have, Hitler or Mussolini? It's like your choices are terrible, you know? But are you really going to pick Hitler, you know?
I think that, listen, I understand why people do that. And listen, I've had arguments with family members over this.
Yeah, but you shouldn't, though, John.
By arguments, I mean I'm trying to, you know, like say, not where I don't talk to people. I mean, I've had these conversations where it's like, okay, I remember this very clearly during Clinton-Trump. We got to vote for Trump because Clinton's the worst. Okay, so you're voting for someone who has no political experience, which, by the way, when Obama did that, you said that disqualifies him because he was only a senator for a year and a half. But Trump has had not you. I was talking to the person I was talking to.
They both say it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, boom. Right.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, so I said, do me a favor, vote for Trump. But please remember that we had this conversation because 4 years from now, you're going to tell me that whoever the Democrats put up are going to be the worst candidate in history again. Kind and of. I told him, I said, write it down somewhere because we're going to talk about this again.
See, I would write it down.
Yeah. Come this cycle, the same guy who you're voting for, Trump. Why? Now, unlike you, he couldn't tell me one thing he thought Trump did right. All he could tell me was how much Biden sucked.
Well, that's our politics, though. I'm sorry.
No, I get it, right? Yeah, but to me, that's why I avoid the political as much as possible.
Because, right. No, that makes sense.
You understand what I'm saying?
No, like, I do. But, John, we're going to be talking politics. You're not avoiding
let's talk politics.
Are you?
No.
When you tweet on Twitter, you're not avoiding politics. My point being, again, I agree with you and what you're saying, but you don't practice it. I'm not dogging you. I'm saying it's that human nature. You got to respond to that tweet every so often you see it.
Well,
yeah? Or somebody says something, you have to say it. So what I'm saying is human nature will always get
right,
the best.
Right. And listen. When I usually reply on Twitter, it's very rarely to crap on someone. It's usually to crap on their ideas. Like, for example.
Okay. I got you.
See what I'm saying?
Like, people, but you do it eloquently.
Fair enough. But for example, if you have the time and you're interested, check out my replies to Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor. Because what he posts is patent nonsense. Like, for example,
flat out lies.
I said to him once, you're either the dumbest man alive or you have no scruples whatsoever. For example, he defines inflation in terms of the way he defines inflation, which is profits of big companies, is the same thing as saying the cause of a flu is sneezing. No, sneezing and coughing are the results of the flu. Yeah. Not what gives you the flu, right? So
that's just how bad our politics have become.
You're right.
So just flat out lie.
Yeah, and that's why. Listen, you want to know someone else who is a big, if you watch his stuff on YouTube, is to me very down to earth and can explain libertarianism is Penn Jillette, the magician, magician.
That's right.
Listen to him talk about libertarianism, especially not so much now, and we'll talk because of the infighting in the libertarian circles. But when, like, for example, the way he described government and when government should be allowed to use their coercive powers is amazing. He said, and I don't know if it's his idea, but he's the one I heard it from.
But you agree with him, right?
Yeah. He said, picture that the government is a person, and that person is the only one you know that has a gun. When would you allow that person to use a gun in your name, right? If you're a good person. Mm-hmm. If I saw someone getting attacked or raped, would I allow the person with the gun to use the gun to stop that action? Yes, I would. If I was someone who wanted to see a library built, would I use that person with the gun to steal money to build the library? I wouldn't. And yet, when we say tax the rich to build a library, that's what we're doing. We're sending the government to use their guns to steal money from people to build a library. So the fact that you're building a library, as noble as that is, doesn't excuse the fact that you stole money under threat of violence by the government to build that library. And when you start to think of things like that in that way, because William...
That's a great point. I just want to add to it. I think what makes our system so great is because technically we would vote if we would allow the taxation. So we, the people giving the money, would vote on it. I mean, that's not how politics really works. But you're right. No gun, but let's take it to the people. Hey, y'all want to raise our taxes so we can build this church? That's the missing ingredient today.
Yeah, but you see, this is, again, where conservatives and libertarians will split, right? You just stated something that sounds very fair and simple, but in reality, a libertarian would tell you Well, if all the people agreed to get their money together to build a library, why do you need the government?
Right, right, right. And John, I would say to you, I agree with John. I'd rather live life his way. But that's utopian lunacy. That's a utopian fantasy. That's not how the history of civilization has worked since the dawn of time. I'm not saying this to be hurtful or argumentative. I'm saying that that's kind of how the world has worked.
And folks, this is like what I mentioned earlier about these are the discussions we have when we're not on the air, and these are discussions that will go on till 2 a.m. over the phone with us. These are the types of discussions because I don't disagree with William either. So, for example, there's a lot of flavors of libertarianism, right? There's classical liberalism.
Well, talk to me about the Mises libertarianism, because it's one of the more popular ones.
Sure, I'll throw that out there. So, right now, the Libertarian Party, its leadership, and it was a thorough takeover when I say this. They took control of the National Party.
Takeover.
The majority of the state parties is something called the Mises Caucus.
Okay, Mises, sorry.
Yeah.
Mises.
And Mises Caucus is named after Ludwig von Mises, who was an Austrian economist. A lot of people view him as one of the core economic founders of libertarian economic thinking. He was an Austrian economist. And if you don't know the difference between an Austrian economist and any other kind of economist, take 10 minutes to look it up on the internet.
But you know, John, hardly any of us do. But when somebody says Austrian economics, I think the master economic race, you know, it's like, if for some reason in my head, somebody says Austrian economics, I'm like, oh, they're smart.
They're smart, but they're very dry. All of them. They've got that very Germanic terseness, almost like Spartans. You know, it's a very Spartan language and it's a very Spartan philosophy, but it's actually probably, in my opinion, the most accurate of the economic models because they base their theories on what they've seen and on empirical proof. None of this Keynesian nonsense, none of this Marxist bullshit. It's just, this is what happens. This is why you should not try to control economies,
it's
right?
Basic. Common sense again.
Yeah. So that's why the Mises Caucus is named after Ludwig von Mises. However, I would argue that the Mises Caucus real heroes boil down to two main people. For the intellectuals in the Mises Caucus, it's actually Mises' student, Murray Rothbard, that they truly follow, because he was like an anarcho-capitalist. He was harsh. He was like, you know, like...
Briefly, in 10 seconds, what is an anarcho-capitalist?
Basically, they believe that they love capitalism, but they don't think it should function under the auspices of the state.
Capitalism with no government, a free-for-all business.
Yeah, literally a mix of anarchists, no government at all, full volunteerism, and capitalism. They don't view capitalism as being bad. They view it as a necessary...
Exactly. They just don't want government.
Right, they don't want government. And they may have philosophical issues around what it means to have private property, but they do believe in private property.
Gotcha. And that's who you think today's Mises...
Absolutely, without a doubt, and also in temperament. The second person, and probably the most dominant person, that if you ask 100 Mises guys, 98 will tell you that this is their hero, Ron Paul. The Republican congressman for, I don't know how many, 22 terms or something like that,
20
from
terms.
Texas.
Yeah. You know how many bills he actually got passed?
Zero.
One.
Oh, one? Okay. I was going to say, he basically said, now listen, Ron Paul.
I don't want to digress. We can talk Ron Paul for hours.
The Mises Caucus, though, those are their two heroes.
Gotcha.
Even though it's named Mises, it's actually Mises' student, Rothbard. And by the way, Mises had a ton of influential students. He really set forth, talk about the effect of a philosophical libertarian, Friedrich Hayek, that most people, if you're into economics, know about. He's the guy who wrote the book, The Road to Serfdom.
Friedrich Hayek, very familiar name.
Yeah. And
okay,
then,
but so John, though, the Mises Caucus took control of leadership. If you can answer that in two parts, because I'm really fascinated, I think the audience is too, with somebody just doesn't sprout overnight. Even Obama was a Democrat-made product. So where did the groundswell come for all of this to happen? Because the way you described it was literally an overnight hostile takeover.
It wasn't overnight, but maybe in political terms it was. The Mises Caucus was founded in 2017.
Very recent.
And what they did is they were comprised of younger people, I would say. Oh, their membership is like the Ron Paul kids who were in college, yeah, who had grown up, who had graduated. So when you look at those guys, and here's some prominent met names you may or not heard of. Spike Cohen, a man I've interviewed, member of the Mises Caucus. Dave Smith, the comedian who might be their presidential candidate in 2024.
I hope not.
Mises Caucus. Andrea McArdle, the LP national chair now, Mises Caucus. These Tom Woods, who's a very popular libertarian podcaster, Mises Caucus. Now, these guys said, listen, the old way of doing things ain't getting stuff done. And what we
see within the libertarian circle.
This is within the Libertarian Party.
So the old libertarian principles weren't getting the job done.
Not the principles. And here's the funny part.
I'm sorry, the old libertarian methods.
Political methods. Yeah. They had problems with the political methods, which I can almost agree with them on. So
just looking at the results.
Yeah.
Look at your results. You guys are nobodies still.
So I'm not a Mises Caucus guy. I'll state that up front. But it's not their philosophical origins that I – like, for the most part, I would be an anarchist if I thought for a moment that the rest of the world would agree to be anarchist.
Yeah.
But the fact that the rest of the world will, in some cases, can't even comprehend what anarchy is – like, when you tell most people what's anarchy, they think of Somalian pirates, right? Well, that's what they think is anarchist.
They think of an image and –
just chaos.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Chaos. It's just an image of humanity with just chaos.
Yeah,
so it's a negative image from the get-go.
Right.
So that alone kind of – when I hear anarchy and libertarian, I don't think positive thoughts in the sense it's one of the few times the empathy in me comes out. It's like, oh, God, you're tying a perceived negative into a political movement, and it just hurts.
But I understand the frustration because so, for example – when Gary Johnson ran for president.
Oh, hold on. Is Justin Amash a –
No, he's not.
Okay.
And I was just about to break into that, right? So,
apologies.
No problem. So Gary Johnson, that most of us have heard of because he was a two-term Republican governor of New Mexico.
Your most famous libertarian.
To run for office. I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, in the last 5 years. Though,
yeah. And so he ran twice in 2012 and 2016. And Gary Johnson was what – I consider myself a classical liberal / minarchist, which means the only government we accept is the smallest possible government that can provide us with the basic functions of protecting the country, providing a court system.
The Constitution.
And the Constitution, basically, right?
Well, damn, I learned something tonight.
Right?
I'm a minarchist.
Right. We call ourselves minarchists or classical liberals, right?
You know, it's funny because I can't tell you what the hell it is in conservatism that I am. It's just everybody has told me that. It seems what I see. Again, I don't follow an ideology as much as I look at what's common sense and what's the right thing to do. But that's interesting. I'm a minarchist.
Minarchist, yeah.
Minarchist.
So, right. And really, these are all names about classical liberalism. So Gary Johnson fit into that thing. And really, what killed Gary Johnson and what really set off the Mises people to form their own caucus was the politically correct move that was the philosophical betrayal to libertarians.
And that was
selecting William Weld as a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, for the audience, I don't know squat about William Weld, but the very first moment John mentioned him was never in a good light.
Never. William Weld was the Republican governor, and I'll even do this for you, Republican governor of Massachusetts. He was a rhino, yeah. And listen, I don't even care about Republican politics, but I would agree with you. He was a rhino more than anything. But here's the one thing he certainly wasn't, a libertarian. But for whatever reason, he came in and Spike Cohen, who was the VP candidate for Joe Jorgensen last presidential cycle, basically told me on my show, the reason he got in is he promised to raise $10 million for the Libertarian Party, which for the Libertarian Party was an unheard of sum of money.
You know, John, when you told me that a few weeks ago, I brought it up to my wife and she goes, That's the guy you were talking about with Gary Johnson years ago who was doing it for the money. Then it hit me. You're right. I remember reading some articles about that was the reason he was able to come in and right. be the candidate because it was a pure political calculating move.
Right. He had no libertarian talking points. Like
but
when they asked him
why it was done.
I understand why it was done politically, but it killed the minarchist movement in the Libertarian Party. Why? Because William Weld was so – he didn't even have the good sense to shut up. He would talk and he would say stuff like – when they would ask him like, well, libertarians are against the drug war. What's your position? And he would say stupid shit like, oh, I'd hire a lot more police. How many does any libertarian say hire more police?
You know, John.
Nobody.
This merely shows – merely, is that how you say it? Merely shows.
Yeah.
I've always viewed the Democrats as – at the PhD level of politics and how to train their people from the ground up. And then I view the Republicans as freshmen in college. But hearing you, what I'm hearing is
high school
just complete political novices here and they're handlers. Because I don't care if it's Obama, Trump, whatever, they always have handlers. And whether they listen to them or not, it's another story. But that situation, it sounds like he didn't even have any handlers.
Well, if he did, he didn't listen to them.
Or he was also older, multi-rich, super rich. And those are the type of people that unless it's a proven political handler, like if he has a Pat Riley of handlers, you know, that was doomed to fail. You know, but John, I guess my question to you, though, is I know why the move was made. It was purely political. Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is the ones who attacked the minarchists are the ones who used politically the philosophy of libertarianism to get their way in the long term. Because at the end of the day is what he did wasn't good or bad. It was a politically calculated move to try to become competitive. Yes or no?
So that was probably – and I'm guessing here that was probably Nicholas Sawark, who was the prior LP national chairman prior to the Mises takeover. Now, listen, in 2016, even the Mises caucus guys say this, that if the vice presidential slot had gone to the guy who should have been vice president on that ticket,
who was
our friend Larry Sharp.
Okay, Larry Sharp.
It was supposed to be Gary and Larry. That was the ticket, Gary and Larry.
Gary and Larry.
The Mises guys would have been happy, I think, with a Larry Sharp. And a Gary and Larry ticket would have had broad appeal. Larry Sharp, for those that don't know, is African-American, but he's a very strong, practical guy. He has practical ideas for how to run New York State. He's running for governor again.
But what's the problem with him?
Nothing.
There's a big major problem. He has no money.
Oh, he has no money, but yeah.
Politically speaking, he's a nobody.
Right.
John, one quick lesson for your audience that I find frustrating that I've never gotten in arguments. I just kind of shut up and walk away is when I've been told over and over and over from Republicans, if you want to get into the races here, you got to be willing to put up a good chunk of your money. And my point isn't. The issue isn't putting up the good chunk of the money. That's one of the criteria, and this is where the philosophy and my political knowledge kind of like conflict because I'm like, no. If there's a good candidate, money shouldn't be the issue. And from what I'm hearing, and they disagree. And in your case, I'm looking at it, and I'm actually agreeing with what they told me. But you're disagreeing more on the fact that you don't think money should have been the issue.
I don't think money should have been the issue. But even if I agree with that it was the right move politically, the execution of it was horrible. In other words, if you wanted to bring in William Weld for his money fundraising capabilities, fine. Guess what? Either get him to repeat the party plank or come to shut up. One or the other.
And that's not even a political thing. That's like, hey, if you're whatever in life, you represent it, you speak that party line.
Well, what was the final blow? He endorsed Hillary Clinton while he was part of the Libertarian ticket. So the Mises guys saw this and went, this is nuts. We can't have any of this.
They went ballistic.
They went ballistic and they made it their goal to take over the party and replace it with aggressive messaging, better politics. Now, excuse me, I'm willing to give them credit, William. As much as I disagree with them, I'm willing to give them credit. They are clearly better organized than the minarchist faction, the classical liberal faction. Why? To your point, in 4 or 5 short years, they took over the party from zero. Okay? Second, they are reinvigorating young people to come back into the party. That's two good things. Now, here's the negatives. They sound like children. So when you see a lot of this Libertarian Party stuff going on right now, and this is where the infighting comes in, and I'm, you know, like I've called it out on Twitter. I don't like it, but it is what it is. They are the ones who tweeted out the picture of Meghan McCain crying over her father's casket with the caption, "Happy Holidays."
The Songbird McCain casket.
It was a horrible message. Now, as they scrambled to defend themselves, including Tom Woods, including Dave Smith, including Andrea McArdle, and by the way, they doubled down on that messaging. And there was some other racist stuff that came out too, quite honestly, out of the and probably the biggest instigators are the New Hampshire state Libertarian Party.
That's because that's your most powerful party in the country.
Probably, yeah, in terms of the state and everything.
I'm speculating, and I say that only because there's only one Libertarian Party I have ever heard on election night winning, and those are those state assembly, yes. State Senate seats, Libertarian. I don't know how many win, but it seems every cycle there's a Libertarian.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just kind of brings into your mind.
And I give them props for that. But the problem is that they act like children. They have the temperament of children. And whether or not they feud – now, here's the sad part. I agree with their underlying philosophy, like their philosophy of freedom of association, of free complete free speech, economic capitalism to the hilt. I don't think they've adapted complete anarchism, but very small government.
What you're saying is you agree with the message. You don't agree with how they're portraying or sending the
message.
Honestly,
I don't think they're drawing people in. I have to see – like, well, we're going to see the membership numbers, but I could tell you right now, I know for a fact a lot of the older guard, like guys our age, are leaving the Libertarian Party because they feel it doesn't represent them anymore.
You know, now, John, one of your bigwigs sent me a tweet when I challenged him. He goes, "It's grown in 10 years. You all peaked at 3.2% nationally."
You're talking about Todd Hagopian.
Is that his name? But because of you all peaked with 3.2%, I think, because of Gary Johnson and his name recognition. Gary Johnson was not known as a libertarian. Gary Johnson was known as a Republican governor of New Mexico, a self-made entrepreneur. The libertarianism is something you discovered about him. Now, locally, it could be a completely different story. I'm talking at the national level.
Yeah.
Thus, he had name recognition, which is why he dominated and was able to run for president twice, because the true heart and soul, good and bad, seemed to be John McAfee with that Libertarian Party.
I don't know that he was the heart and soul of it. He was
in terms of who fought. Dude, there was no Libertarian louder than him in his heyday there. He just became nuts.
Well, you're talking specifically about 2016. Look, they had...
But let me finish my point, though. Yeah. The point being is Gary Johnson brought you recognition. You're trying to tell us that people are leaving, but there's really been no growth. If you pull that 1 year, because the next year you lost over a full point and a half of growth and dropped back down. To me, I look at growth 1 to 3% every X amount of years or generations, however you figure the formula out. But in 10 years, it's 0.2%, 0.3%. Is there really growth, John, or is that more?
Yeah, no, there's
really growth. Wish you had, but you don't.
No, there's growth. It's just not at a very accelerated rate. There's growth.
So you're talking a technicality, brother.
Well, there's the other thing too, and this is where I would then push back to you about the philosophy and the politics, right? There's clear indication. So, for example, when Rasmussen or when Quinnipiac polls go out and they ask people about opinions about individual subject matter, they don't tell them if it's Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Socialist. They just ask them, like, do you support this? Do you support that?
Well, hold on. You are talking about the Facebook.
No. I'm talking about legitimate research firms.
No. But I'm saying you can boil it down to that as well.
It's a little more sophisticated, but fair enough. But my point is, if you start asking people issues, there is no bigger conglomeration around any principle other than libertarianism in this country. And it makes sense. And it does, and I'll tell you why. It matters because it's clearly two things that any third, not just libertarians, any third party struggles against. One is the, quote, wasted vote mentality. People say, well, I would vote here in New York. I would vote for Larry Sharp.
But it's a wasted vote. You're talking about voting questions. I thought you were talking about belief questions.
No, but I'm saying the beliefs are there. Most Americans are libertarian leaning because that's the nature of Americans, right?
I disagree. I mean, in a utopian fantasy, yeah.
Not in a utopian fantasy.
Yeah,
listen.
No, it is utopian. You know why? Because those questions are out of context, meaning they're just open air questions, meaning, you know, what do you think of this? Well, in a perfect world, that's what I think of it.
No, they ask them, they ask them stuff like, do you agree with raising taxes to provide these services? Do you think that we should be involved in the international affairs of other countries militarily? Do you think there's a right to an abortion?
That's a great question. That's exactly what I'm referring to. So the real question is, you know, it's like in context, do you agree we should be involved in World War II or just let Nazis, you know, or watch it all, the world implode?
Right.
You see what I'm talking about in context?
I understand what you're saying. And still, most, if not all libertarians, for example, would tell you they don't believe in war unless it's an act of self-defense. So World War II, for example, was self-defense because we were attacked by the Japanese.
Yeah.
Now, whether that meant going into Europe or not is another story.
Yeah.
But you get my point. For example, Vietnam would not be anything libertarian supported. Iraq would not be anything libertarian supported. Afghanistan.
Oh, I agree with all that.
Right? So anyway, my point is, for most Americans, and Larry Sharp had a great quote, all American heroes are outlaws. And if you think about it, it's true. George Washington was an outlaw. Thomas Jefferson was an outlaw. Most cowboys that we look up to. Right. Most cowboys that we look up to.
John Dillinger.
Right. That's what we're trying to say. But when you have a hero, Americans, iconic heroes, they tend to be outlaws, people who buck the system.
Rebels.
Fair enough. Rebels. And those are very much libertarian qualities. So when you look at that, then you say to yourself, well, most people have libertarian leanings, or a large chunk of them. Why won't they vote for a libertarian? And it comes down to two reasons. One is the wasted vote theory. And the other one is the Libertarian Party is relatively new, and they still haven't gotten their act together. Now, will these Mises Caucus guys be able to do that? Maybe. I don't know. I would just like to see them not abandon their principles that most people believe in, because if you turn the Libertarian Party into Republican light or Democrat light, there's no point to exist. I also don't think that the days of influencing the two major parties from within, those are gone. Trump killed that for the Republicans. Sanders and AOC killed that for the Democrats.
That was killed before Trump. That got killed with Bush 1 or Bush – I'm sorry.
No,
Bush,
but here's the thing.
Bush 2.
Let me give you an example. When the Tea Party hit, right? Remember the Tea Party wave?
Oh, yeah. I remember that very explicitly.
The Tea Party guys that are still in office were all libertarians. Justin Amash until recently, Thomas Massie. Who's the guy from Utah?
Some of the ones that you're mentioning, but the
both Mike Lee.
I mean, there was a whole combination of libertarians and conservatives and frauds, flat out frauds.
I understand that, but the ones who emerged out of that flash movement were the libertarians. They formed the Liberty Caucus in Congress.
Right. Conservatives brought them the power.
Right, and people thought we could steer the Republicans, just like Ron Paul tried to, and he never succeeded. To go more towards liberty. That failed miserably. And it was killed entirely by Trump. Trump killed it entirely.
It was killed by the big machines in place. John, let me tell you this story real quick about what your issue with the Mises Caucus, where I would say grow up from as a parent to a son. You just got to wait. In 20 years, you're going to go, oh, I knew what Dad was talking about. Is as a kid.
You mean the Mises guys should feel that way?
Yeah, and you too, because you're part of the anger as to why you would be leaving if you were one of those guys who was involved early on. Is I used to get angry at the Republican Party because as a former Democrat, I read Alinsky's book decades ago. I knew how to fight. I knew My job wasn't to debate you, John. My job was to literally try to destroy you, even as a kid. And I understood Democrats, we would fight until we completely, thoroughly won. There is no second rematch. It's, you're destroyed. And I get frustrated after I realize I wasn't a Democrat. I was a conservative, how they wouldn't fight, how I got so sick and tired of eloquent this, how to speak, how to that, while Bill Clinton was out there getting a blowjob from heaven in his greatest fantasy because he's in the Oval Office, you know, leading this life. And our guys are worried about how we are perceived. And my point being is America at the end of the day didn't care what Clinton was doing or how they perceived him. And we never got over that. And that's why Obama became the champion at his time, was because the blacks were looking for a voice of a fighter. And that's why Trump, you know, the Mises caucus, they see that formula of, no, we're not going to debate. We're going to punch you in the face, period. Image of Meghan McCain, that's what that was. And the reason I bring it up, and I bring it up in this tone, is that's a reality check. You're not going to change that. That's human nature. That's emotion. Emotion is what drives the mob. And the Democrats have the market on that. And Mises is tired of it, as the people who back Trump, I'm being superficial because there's always the economics of the time and jobs and cost of living and stuff like that. That's also pounding on the back. But your Mises people are like babies right now, taking steps, and they're going to make their mistakes. But what irks me is when I see a Justin Amash, not just Amash himself, but like, dude, you had 8 years and you couldn't freaking convince a single Republican pretty much to do anything you want. But at the same time, you bragged about voting with Trump 80% of the time, yet still hating him. Yeah, my point being is you did not unify anybody. Let's see what the Mises caucus has to say, because what I see, John, is they're in the political fight. You're judging them as a philosopher. Now, you may say otherwise, but at the end of the day, that's how I
see. No, it's not true, because I already said I agree with most of their principles. Like, if I read through their planks.
Okay, I apologize. Well, meaning the people who you're talking about.
Yeah, I agree with most of what.
My apologies.
Like, listen, Spike Cohen is a Mises caucus guy.
Right.
I agree with Spike Cohen on a lot of. When we talked, I was actually surprised to find out I agree with like 95% of what he says.
And even he gave the inclination. It's a great interview. You can check it out on The Big Questions with Big John at sportsgrumblings.com. But, I mean, he actually may have said it, but it was easily the body language there that he doesn't agree with everything they've done, though, also.
Right. He felt that it was counterproductive, not the message. Like, the message in that Meghan McCain tweet, I agree with. McCain was a war hawk. He was a warmonger. I agree with that. If someone said to me, like, should we have a national peace day in the name of McCain, I would laugh at that. But what purpose did it serve to attack his grieving daughter?
But that's my point, is that's the type of thing where this is a lesson to be learned. Okay, little harsh, we learn and we grow.
I would agree with you if they were learning.
You guys have to go through that process. In fact,
agreed.
Everybody does. The conservatives have to go through that process again. You know, I mean, to me, the perfect conservative party in my lifetime would be the Reagan coalition without the fundamentalism, meaning more individual rights versus God's telling us how to live this way. You know, so I don't have a horse in this fight.
A horse in this race.
But that's what I see. And then I see the infighting. And that's when I'm like, I laugh, because I'm like, dear God, I thought it was just conservatives who were just like 6-year-old kids. But it's you guys. And social media,
it's kind of hard. Yeah. And it really, it depends. I also think it's a generational thing. So, for example, I'm a big fan of Larry Sharp. I'm a big fan of Justin Amash. Very big fan of both those guys. Both of them came out and said, we disagree with they both welcomed the Mises caucus. Even though they're not Mises guys, they welcomed them in, right? But they said, you guys are not, we don't think you're doing this the right way. Now, what's interesting is at the last Libertarian National Convention, Justin Amash got up there and he's talking and he's saying, let me read some quotes to you from a book. And in it said, we should not strive for anarchy. We should strive for minarchy. and the crowd is booing because it's all Mises guys at the convention. Boo, get off the stage. You know, and it says we should strive to unify on common belief. Boo, get off the stage. And he held up the book. You know who it was from?
Their guy.
Ludwig von Mises. Yeah, he's the one who wrote that stuff.
Yeah.
And the crowd fell silent. See, the one thing about Justin Amash, love him or hate him, he's super smart.
No, I don't doubt that, and that was a brilliant move. Yeah. But it just shows, see, what I'm hearing is, yeah, Libertarian Party, no different than the sheep John loves the mock.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I've said that.
But some of us don't call them rubes, do we?
Well, here's the difference.
There's just you justifying it.
I was going to say, in my defense, let me explain that slur that I used.
Okay, John, I've allowed us to get the digress, and I apologize. So, getting back to Mises, they rule the roost now, but you haven't actually said what. I apologize. You did say the VP candidate is what unified the Mises. But real quick, I don't want to go too much time on it, but how does it go from a quick movement into a few years? They take in what, a year, 18 months, 1 to 2 years, and they took over the party. I mean, I have my own beliefs based on what I've seen from the Libertarian Party itself, but you are a Libertarian. What allowed them to take over so quickly?
They're young, full of energy, and activists, and they understand the new media. And And they understand, listen, at your urging, and it's your fault I did this, by the way, I actually attended my local Libertarian Party meeting for the first time last week. It's the first and last time I'll ever do that. It was just guys older than me, which means they were probably ancient, sitting around complaining. And when I pointed out simple things like, hey, the links to your website don't work.
Wow, John, that sounds horrible. I mean, I'll be honest. My Republican Party here in San Diego County is extremely – they're a well-oiled machine, even though they screw up half the time. It sounds really like – it sounds to me like a bad movie edition of what was the Breakfast Club, you know?
Yeah. No, and William, it was bad because – not because I expected – you know, first of all, and you told me this is quite – common. So it was a dozen people at the meeting. So, and you told me for small groups, that's about what you would expect. Yeah.
Like I said, ours is unique, but for the most part, especially in areas where it's a small party, a dozen people, that's how the nucleus starts.
Yeah. But for example, the co-chairman, I believe, or the vice chair of the party says, yeah, well, I got to run because I got to go to an Oath Keepers meeting. And I'm like, wait a second.
Well, tell the audience what an Oath Keepers are, because I don't know.
The Oath Keeper group, basically, to cut to the quick, is a Trump-backed group that supported him, especially at the January 6th, whatever you want to call it, protest, insurrection, riot.
Group.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people that says there are certain lines in the sand where you can't call yourself a libertarian anymore. If you're a warmonger, you can't be a libertarian. If you believe in taxation for redistribution of wealth, you can't be a libertarian. If you believe in a president who believes in ultimate presidential authority, believes in eminent domain, believes in tariffs, believes in this and that, whether you agree with it or not, I'm not judging that. But if you believe in that...
You're saying this is one of your tenets of what makes you libertarian or not.
You can't be a libertarian. And that's fine. Go be a Republican. That's fine. But you can't be a libertarian. That's all there is to it.
Shows how uneducated. For example, I had no qualms saying I am an uneducated conservatism. Meaning, if I had to point to a conservative law, I wouldn't tell you. I'm like, I just live the life I live. But in this situation, the fact that they're thinking libertarianism is one thing when in reality it's not what they're thinking, that's problematic for any growth of any.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and
I mean, for example, that's right to the fundamental. If you're a fundamentalist first and you don't know what a conservative is, you're why our party struggles a lot of times.
Yeah.
And
that's another problem with the Mises Caucus I was going to get into. One of the problems is that they're very enigmatic and they're very charming in the sense that they attract people to them. So one guy at this meeting said, and you know what? We should pass a resolution supporting the Mises Caucus and condemning the classical liberals of the party. And I said, why? You know, like I didn't say I was or I wasn't. I just said, why? Give me your reasoning. If we're here to debate, let's debate. And they were all like, who's the new guy? You know, but So the guy says to me, because everything they say about him is lies. And I swear to you, William, again, without judging the content, but just to show you the difference, he sounded like a Trump supporter complaining about fake news. Whether it's true or not, it was
the same words.
William, it was the exact same words.
No, I would tell you to stick around and educate those people.
Well, I did. I said to him, I said...
No. I mean the long term. More than
no, I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, I asked that guy, I said, did you see the tweet about Meghan McCain's... the picture with Meghan McCain crying over her father's funeral? He said, I don't know what you're talking about. I literally shared my screen because it was a Zoom meeting. And I said, this is the one I'm talking about. And he goes, oh, that's horrible. Who did that? I go, that was literally the first tweet the Mises Caucus out of New Hampshire sent, right?
And that's my whole point. Educate them. Stick around. Educate.
Yeah, I don't have the patience for it. I'll try, but I don't have the patience for it.
You enjoy these type of talks. If I was in that group, I'd go, John, you can come in every meeting and ask to look at the agenda, ask if they can put this on there where you discuss this topic.
But
and
you
that's
see,
how you educate.
But you see, here's the thing, William. Well, here's the thing, William, and this is part of my other complaint about the Mises, which, by the way, it's a complaint that I've heard not Larry Sharp make, but Justin Amash make, is they're very open to accepting disaffected ultra-right-wing conservatives. Now, for those that don't understand why that's a problem, let me explain something. When someone says to me, what are libertarians? Or someone says that to a libertarian, what's the common answer you hear? We're fiscally conservative and we're socially liberal. I hate that description because it paints us in the terms of Republicans and Democrats. We're neither. We're not fiscally conservative. We believe in free markets. We believe in capitalism.
So you're
that's
saying
what we believe
one,
in.
There's one worldview of libertarianism, and that's how JTG sees it. I'm being serious here.
No, that's how – that's how
libertarians, but you're judging the world based on how you present. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
What I'm saying is if you're going to describe yourself, forget whether it's right or wrong. I'm saying if I describe myself in your terms, William, I've already lost the fight as far as I'm concerned.
Intellectually
and politically, right?
Yeah,
for example, if someone walks up to you and you said to me, for example, hey, John, what kind of football player are you? And I go, you know what? I'm another Gail Sayers or I'm another Larry Zonka. You'd be like, well, why don't I just go get Larry Zonka then? Right?
Because he's old, fat, white, and gay.
Well, you, so am I. I'm old, white, and fat too. But my point is, why would you paint yourself in your opponent's terms?
Yeah, John,
libertarian should say, describe libertarian for me. I trust people more than I trust the government. See, to
John,
that's a great sentence.
You do have a big problem if that's what they're saying, and they're supposed to be libertarians. You know, I can't argue that. My point
actually,
is,
no libertarian. You know who said it last that annoyed me, even though I liked him, was Gary Johnson.
But see, Gary Johnson, that's my whole point. Gary Johnson lived his professional political life as a Republican.
He did.
So Dave Smith is an up and comer right now in this party.
Very much.
A little ironic. I don't know if ironic by definition is the right word. Maybe perplexing or that, because realistically speaking, it doesn't matter that he's a comedian. Perception is reality, not truth.
Yeah.
And with his whole background, anything and everything will be taken out of context if he would ever pose a serious challenge at any level, you know. But that said, he's an extremely bright individual. You
absolutely
can see it when he talks. You can see it as his wheels are churning when he's there. But he also shows political immaturity in the sense of how he words certain things. It's like, I get what you're saying, but you're not saying it right. Or they're going to take it this way. And I'm into that a lot because being Latino – it's terrible to say, but there's a certain way Blacks, Latinos, different cultures talk to one another and how we interpret, how we hear things. So, but when you expand on it, that's just human nature. Every person delivers a message in their own certain way. So I see him as a bright mind. And here's the kicker, John. Nobody knows who Spike Cohen is. Nobody knows who Larry Sharp is. But more people in the libertarian circles will know Dave Smith because of his comedic background. He's an entertainer, and that's like a it's like the actor who runs for president, you know, or hell, Trump, you know, that TV person. People say, what made Trump different? He was already a pop culture name, whether you like him or not. Everybody knew Trump had that name recognition. Yeah. Dave Smith has that within the comedic circles, and it seems to me at this moment, a lot of the power of libertarianism seems to be coming out of New York City. Maybe it's because I only really follow a lot of the comedian circuit of libertarians or whatnot, but I had never heard of Spike Cohen until you mentioned him to me. I had never heard of Larry Sharp until you reminded me. I'm like, oh, okay, I do remember him now. You know, so does it make sense what I'm saying? The reason I'm pointing to Dave Smith is he seems to gain the most traction out of your libertarian leaders right now. Right or wrong?
He seems to be getting more traction because he has traction with the dominant faction that also happens to be the best at messaging in terms of getting the word out there. So is he – like, I guarantee you, if you ask 10 Americans, 100 Americans who Dave Smith is, they wouldn't know.
Oh, right. I apologize. One final point. Yeah. What I was going to say is – Dave Smith's new guard, Amash, Johnson, Sharp, Cohen, and maybe not Cohen so much. He's kind of like the tweener, but the ones I just mentioned are the old guard. But it doesn't seem like they hate each other. It just seems there's a different mentality.
No. Justin Amash and Larry Sharp went out of their way to say, we welcome the Mises Caucus leadership. So when they took over this past summer, those old guard guys, and to his credit, when Mises Caucus acolytes started crapping on Amash and Larry Sharp, Dave Smith defended them. And he said, listen, you may disagree with them, but those guys never, ever raised a finger to prevent us from taking over. Yeah, right? So to give Dave Smith credit, he's the first to admit that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's a very smart individual. He's not dumb. He is. When he trips on his words and says something wrong, you know it because I'm watching him on YouTube or something. Yeah. It's in the moment type thing where he's not thinking ahead. He's thinking
as a comedian. Like, I can't tell you.
I think he's thinking with a bigger picture, but doesn't know how to word it.
What I mean by that is a comedian's response, like a comedian's mentality on the stage, especially a stand-up comedian, which is what Dave Smith is, their first response is, when I have the microphone, no one is taking over for me. No one's going to step on me. No one's going to talk over me. It's my mic. It's my time.
Right. That makes sense.
You see that even in his tweets. Like some of these other old school libertarians would engage with him, and he would he would talk to them for one paragraph, and the final thing would be, go F yourself, or ooh, I don't have effing time for you. You know, like you would see these from Dave Smith, right? Like, and I'm saying to myself, if you want to run for president, even for the Libertarian Party, do you like, and it's not like it happened 20 years ago. It's happening in real time right now.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I should add on to some of his tweets could have been worded better, too. And that's the problem with tweeting is it's right off the tip of your mind, meaning you're saying it one way because you mean it that way, but you want to deliver it a different way so it doesn't come out as harsh. And Twitter kind of takes that away. So, but he's the new guard and you have the old guard. So let's fast forward to present day today. The Mises Caucus is running the ship. They don't have issues, but there's been disagreements with some of the elders. And there's obviously a battle brewing, not necessarily with the elders, but the elders' acolytes, for lack of a better word, with the Mises people and their acolytes. It seems like, and Dave Smith, to me, seems to be caught a bit in the middle as a Mises guy, but understanding the importance of the elders in the past.
I don't know if Dave Smith's that guy. I think Spike Cohen is that guy.
I'll tell you now what I've seen of it. I'm an outsider looking in. Dave Smith is the one riding the wave right now.
No, he is. He is. But when you said, I don't think he respects the old guard at all, to be honest with you. I think he says the right things about them sometimes.
Oh, that could be. That could be the case. Yeah. Again, political. And if he does that, he's taking that step from comedian to politics in a very savvy manner. But it's also common sense.
Yeah.
But it's also common sense for people who can think a few steps ahead and understand the big picture.
So
that's I'm kind of intrigued by it.
I agree with you, but this is what it comes down to. Here's let me give you an example. The most recent spark to libertarian explosion, right? There was a candidate running for senator a Libertarian candidate running for senator in Arizona. His name was
that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, Mark Victor. And he was running against someone in the Republican Party called whose name is Blake Masters. Now,
who has ties to Ron Paul? I read somewhere.
Well, let's break it down, right? So, right now, to be honest, the Libertarian candidate is polling between 1.5-2.5%, somewhere in there.
That's real quick, John, just so I don't confuse myself.
Yeah.
There's a Libertarian running for senator or governor or something that's polling at 20%. We're not talking about Victor Mark, are we?
No. He's polling between 1.5-2.5% for Senate in Arizona. Gotcha. Which, by the way, that seat is hotly contested and will decide among one or two others whether the Republicans take over the Senate. The incumbent Democrat and this guy, Blake Masters, are essentially in a statistical dead heat. So this is one of those cases where the Libertarian candidate can either affect an election or be a kingmaker of sorts by throwing his endorsement, right?
Right.
Now, this guy, Mark Victor, and the Libertarian Party, the current Mises Caucus-led party, said, guess what? Now, Victor says he did it on his own, but we all know better. He basically said, vote for Blake Masters. He pulled a William Weld. He said, vote for Blake Masters.
Right.
A lot of Libertarians said, listen, to do this a week before the election is nuts. Why would you wait till now?
It's not coincidence. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, of course.
Politics, that is not coincidental.
Right. I agree with you. So the point was, okay, if he's dropping out, why is he endorsing the Republican? Why is the Mises Caucus supporting that decision?
Let me ask you a question here, John. Is there a fallback candidate they could have supported? Is it yes or no? Is there a fallback Libertarian? Don't vote for me. Vote for this Libertarian.
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
There isn't. You know, so
I don't know because
a question I'm going to bring back up down the road. But I wanted to bring it to your attention now.
I don't know if there was anybody who could have filled in for him. I don't know what state law would have allowed. My understanding is state law would have been
locked out. Everything's locked out now.
Right. Mark Victor's name would have been on the ballot anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're saying then, I apologize, I'm confusing the crowd. In essence, I'm telling you what I'm thinking. But what you're saying is, in essence, he shouldn't have told anybody to vote for anybody that's not a Libertarian.
Right. He should have just kept his mouth shut. Yeah, he should have just kept his mouth shut.
I can buy that because it's a Libertarian Party.
Exactly. Well, the Mises Caucus decided that, no, he did the right thing, and they're defending that decision. So a lot of guys like Justin Amash. Now, the thing about Justin Amash is you have to understand, even though he started out as a Tea Party Republican, he's been through the grind. He got elected several times. Now, granted, he had big money from the Republican National Committee behind him. But the point is he's been through the process. He's been through the grind.
He understands the process, how it works, where the bodies are, especially when they're hanging those bodies over your head.
Right. And basically the Mises Caucus attacked Justin Amash.
They attacked him because Justin Amash agrees kind of with what you're trading.
Exactly. And so did Larry Sharp, by the way.
Right.
Now, to me, both Amash and Sharp are two different kind of libertarians. They both fall into the classical liberal / minarchist camp, but they're very different. Larry Sharp is very much a New York libertarian, which means we're not getting rid of government. No New Yorker's going to vote for no government.
He's just pragmatic. I'm going to defend pragmatic. Larry.
Right. No.
Larry is pragmatic, you know?
Yeah, and by the way, I'm a New Yorker. I'm writing in Larry Sharp because he got screwed over by Cuomo and he got his name kicked off the ballot like two months before the election.
No. You don't live in Jersey. No. Yeah. It's just when I hear suburbs, I always assume Jersey. Yeah.
No, I live in New York. But anyway, so the Mises Caucus turned – now, Dave Smith defended them and said you shouldn't be attacking these guys even if they disagree with us because they were very open to us and we need to show some unity. But the pushback from the rest of the Libertarian Party was very severe on this, William. So the question I have for you as a conservative, as a political experienced political guy – would you agree with the Mises Caucus saying, you know what, we should vote for Blake Masters? By the way, I should also throw out.
I'm glad you asked.
Blake Masters, just to throw another quirk in there, was denied money by Mitch McConnell. He said, we're not spending any more money on Blake Masters. Why? Because he's a Trump guy. Trump endorsed him, and Trump sent him money, or Trump's super PAC, MAGA Inc., or whatever,
sent him
the money.
Right, right.
So you've got that going, too. He's not an establishment Republican. He's a Trump Republican. So now, and you've got, like, the money guys in the Republican Party not supporting him, so Trump's super PAC had to step in.
All right, John, I'll put that.
So what's going on? What would you do?
First of all, let's redefine a derogatory word here, Trump Republican. What is a Trump Republican?
Wait, why is it derogatory?
Because when people usually say Trump Republican, especially from the Rhino side, it's usually in a derogatory way.
Trump Republican, meaning that he is a Trump-endorsed candidate.
Right, and that actually has nothing to do with anything. Because at the end of the day, what did Trump Republican give us? The lowest unemployment rate.
Hold on,
I get your point. Yeah. But my point is I would wear that proudly. My issue would be Mitch McConnell's, you know, and what the bleep have you done? Kind of nothing except kind of enrich yourself. Now, I'm being facetious here, but getting back to your point is they did it in a derogatory sense to hurt Blake Masters, his own party, you know. But that doesn't have much to do with your point. At the end of the day, the old guard is, if you put a gun to my head, it's the old guard that is correct. However, I will put a caveat on this.
Fair enough.
You guys came into the Mises Caucus came into existence in 2017. The Libertarian Party in 1972, you said, or 73?
Yeah, 72.
Y'all are babes in the woods. The Republican Party is the party of Lincoln. It was created for a specific purpose, part of it being to help free the slaves. So there was a goal. Libertarian is freedom, which encompasses 10 zillion things. So whereas the Republican Party left the Whig Party and had a clear focal point, the Libertarian Party, liberty is a very big word and a very big umbrella. And then you're starting as a third party with two entrenched parties. Now you fast forward to a battle having taken place, literally a civil war, and there's a new king who feels it's good to be king based off their tweets and how they don't really care. And the reason I bring this up is he who rules calls the shots. Sure. They not only earn power, they took it. But I'm not defending them from that perspective. They're also a new kid on the block. They've got to do things differently. Right now, they're taking the mental thought frame of there's a Republican with libertarian tendencies. Let's try to work with them. And that is always acceptable in the startup of anything in life. People forget. Apple almost went bankrupt and Microsoft bought, 10 or 15% of them and literally saved their tails. You know, what I'm saying is when you're young and you're growing, alignments that will go away 10, 15, 20 years can and will always happen. I'm not saying that's happening here.
So, strategically, here's what I'm going to ask you. Why didn't the Libertarian Party co-run Masters?
Because that's not how politics works and the Republicans would never have had it. You know,
I could tell you it's happened in New York.
No. That's a blue state. Arizona is a different makeup. It used to be a red state that's been a purple state for now about 15 years, 20 years, and there's a different type of battle that's going on. People don't like to admit that, but there is no battle in California. You know, as bad as Biden has created this country right now in the eyes of many, it's still a deep blue state, no different than New York. The fact that the hockey lie or whatever is pissing race away because she's too stupid to realize how to blatantly lie like she used to do in the past is why
she's going to – Lee Zeldin's not going to win.
He's not going to win, but he's making it a race.
Regardless, the point.
Back to Masters, John. Yeah. What I'm trying to tell you is both sides have legitimate righteousness in this. The Libertarian Party and the Mises Caucus, they're tired of being nothing but losers since 1972. And they want to do something, and they want to make an impact in a moment. Is this the right one? Again, if I'm a Libertarian – and I'm looking at the parties representing me and my beliefs? No, because he's a Republican, you know?
I agree with you.
But if they're going to get something out of it, then that's something different. My belief is they're not going to get anything out of it. And this guy should have negotiated maybe a donation to the party. Negotiated something legal, but that would benefit the Libertarian Party. I disagree with the polling because I've been following polling since 2016 very closely. And prior to that, I'm a self-taught statistician. I'm using that word too big because I'm barely self-taught in terms of how to create surveys, how to do polls properly, because I had to do that for marketing of my company. So I'm familiar with how that works. And it's not a lie. It's not a myth. When you look at the raw data, most polls today, they're dog crap, and they pull leftists all the way. It's to create a narrative. Now, you may disagree with my answer to create a narrative, and I'm not going to argue that, but there is no denying when you look at the actual data. What happens is about a month out is when the polls start to get tighter and tighter and tighter, and that's simple economics. A company doesn't want to be seen as, oh, dude, they were way off. You know, so these races tighten up. So I would look at the polling now to see what percentage of a difference this libertarian candidate will actually make.
The polls I'm quoting were from like a week ago. They had.
I'm talking about the real clear politics always has a cumulative version.
Cumulative, yeah. And so does 538. Yeah. Just focus on the legitimate. And that's what 538 did. Basically, every poll
I've read. 538 is very biased. I followed them from their startup days, John. I don't follow them anymore. And now I'm talking about their opinion, but they also know there's a lot of bad polling, and they still calculate that into their formulas because they swing a leftist way. They haven't really gotten much right since the Obama years. Yeah, that's the actual current debate that's going on within the Democratic Party is how good is Nate. What's his name?
Nate Silver
anymore.
Yeah, he's
I had to say that because people assume he's never wrong.
Nobody said he's never wrong.
In general.
But as a statistician myself, as a data analyst myself, as a data scientist, I could tell you I have faith in what he does. And people think that you have to be right all the time, but that's not anyway.
No, I don't deny his formulas and all that. I actually question the data he's using, not the formulas he's created or things like
right,
that.
Right, which
he did get Obama smack dab on the money.
Which is fair enough. I tend to agree with you. I think most people don't know how to take polls in a fair way. But anyway, regardless, anything that we have that's actually out there, whether – take it for what it's worth. It shows both candidates in a dead heat, which is different than having showed the Democrat up by 10 points, say, 2 months ago. So you're right. The race has tightened, and it's been Masters who's been catching up. Excuse me. The Republican has been catching up.
Right, right. So, and again, that's my whole basis of the outlier polls. And my personal belief is to create a positive image for the Democrats. John, there has not been an election cycle where this formula has not gone off without a hitch, meaning the Democrats. I mean, didn't you question just logically thinking 6 months ago when the economy was shitting, and I do mean it that way, shitting on itself, and yet there's Biden's poll number starting to rise above 46, 47. Oh, he's over 50% for the first time. I'm like, what the hell? Who are you polling? Then you look at the data and it's very questionable, and now everything's, and I'm just using him as an example. But we should have been questioning that. I'm looking right now at the and the reason I say that is because now everything's completely changed. It's Kelly's has a +2. It's a toss up. I'm looking at your polls here, and you're right. +1, +1, +2, +6. I would immediately question the New York Times poll, though. You know, so I guess my point is, John, you are absolutely correct. That 1 to 2 point difference appears to be something that could make a difference. And with that said, you ask for what I would have done strategically. I would have listened to the elders on the surface. Got what you're saying, boss. I respect that. That's my initial thought. Let me go dig in and see what's happening. And then knowing that my people's votes can determine this election, that's when philosophy gets thrown out of the window and you got to get down to business for the Libertarian Party political machine. And that means, what do I get if I deliver you my people? That's
fair
what
enough.
That guy should
fair enough.
And that's the difference between philosophy and politics.
Now, I would agree with that, right? If you're in a position to be a kingmaker, at least become the queen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. Like there's, unless, look, we don't know for sure what really happened. If this guy,
what are they saying happened, though?
Nothing. They're just saying that this guy, and apparently this guy, and I have to admit, I only know about him a little bit. I didn't know about him. He's a little bit of a flake. In other words.
Who?
Victor.
Oh, gotcha.
Mark Victor, because he's not I don't know how much of a libertarian he is, but he calls his movement the Live and Let Live movement, and it's basically an anti-war movement.
Sure, it's not a Roger Moore, James Bond movie?
Yeah, right? He described it as an anti-war movement. In other words, that's his litmus test. That's his core issue, anti-war. So to the extent that that lines up with libertarian thinking, fine. To the extent that I think he's an entrepreneur, fine. But if that was the case, he should have gone to the Republicans and the Mises Caucus, whoever was pulling the strings, and said, what are you going to do for us?
Right, exactly.
What are you going to do for us? Are you going to make and you said nothing illegal. Are we going to see a donation? Are you going to help local libertarians in Arizona become like dog catcher or county commissioner or whatever just to raise the profile of libertarians in the state?
John, my next question to you and to them and to any libertarian, because this is extremely important as the machine gets built up. So, for example, locally, if the National Party wants, they can come in and rule the roost locally. They never do because they don't care. That's why Democrats rule the nation right now, because they understand the importance of local. Republicans don't do that, but they have the power to do that. Mitt Romney took all the money that he's supposed to share with the California party here when he ran and abused the system and took it off for himself, not personally, but for his campaign. Democrats have a similar machine. And I bring this up because when they squeeze those cojones, they're not joking around. They will crush him. Does the National Libertarian Party have that kind of power? I would say no for many reasons, but if they don't have that power, then all this is a moot point, because what it boils down to is how much of a libertarian Mark Victor is. Because if the National Party has no ability to sway or do anything, then hell, they shouldn't even be tweeting about why we should support Blake Masters, because they had no sway in it. They should stay out of it themselves. Better to stay out of it and not alienate anyone than to take a side you're not fully informed of or understand what happened and then lose.
Well, there's also, and again, I think these, I don't know if these are rumors, facts, or whatever. The rumblings are that the Mises Caucus has also been sending money to MAGA candidates around the country.
You know, John, do you have enough candidates? I would say you do, but maybe they say something. My question would be, and this isn't a question you can answer, anybody answer, but you got to look into the group, at the people. Where are their origin stories? As I love to say on TV now, oh, that's her origin story, whether it's soap opera or comedy, because it's a superhero genre. But the reason I say that is, what are the roots of that libertarian? Are their roots from the Republican Party? Are their roots? Is it the Silver Spoon kid whose daddy was a Republican? I'm not saying anybody specifically.
Right. The accusation is that they're not even sending it to say MAGA guys who are masquerading as libertarians. They are flat out supporting monetarily Republican candidates.
Well, then that you're starting to get some data there. You have support Blake Masters, a Trump backed Republican. They were sending money to Trump back. Again, you got to go to the heart and soul. Who's calling the shots and what is their origin story? As corny as that sounds, I love saying it though.
Yeah, origin story. Yeah, but here's the funny thing. To tie this up, this is also a concern of a lot of people from the old guard, myself included. Not that I consider myself a political old guard, but just an old school libertarian. The Mises folks are making it very easy to shepherd in disaffected alt-right people that the Republican Party, for perception purposes, cannot be aligned with.
Oh, stop. They won't be aligned with them because we disagree with them.
No. I said, said was, these are guys who support Trump, and whether it's for good or bad purposes, the Republican Party doesn't want anything to do with them.
Right. Usually because they're racist. They're idiots. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
You know, John, I don't see that happening as much as what you have is a child who doesn't know the rules.
I agree. But let me ask you something. In the Republican plank, when the Mises Caucus took over, they removed two planks, okay?
Oh, yeah.
One of them was regarding abortion, which, honestly, I understood them taking it out. The assumption is that libertarians are pro-abortion.
But I think you guys were pro-choice, too, most of you.
Yeah, but in my opinion, it's probably more like 60-40, 65-35 pro.
Well, believe it or not, John, it's literally a 50-50 split in those
choice pro life. And quite honestly, every party has that problem. To me, abortion is the one unsolvable issue politically.
But what I'm hearing is the second one, and
the second one is the big problem. Yeah, go ahead.
You don't mess with the plank. The only time I have ever seen conservatives rise up and win in the state where we have been bludgeoned over and over and over is when they try to mess with the plank with certain things like marriage or religion or things like that. And that's when you go to war. And I support the conservatives who go to war over that, because once you have the once that infrastructure is gone, i.e. the plank, and the plank, people, in political terms, is kind of like each state's constitution.
Right. The party's constitution.
Each state has their own little tweaks, just like
that. But I'm saying it's the state party's constitution.
Oh, right. Exactly. So what is the big reveal here, John? Which one here is it that they should not have touched?
The one that denounced racism and bigotry. They took that out of the plank. Now, I
knew why they did it, and technically speaking, you can't disagree, but perception-wise, as I just said earlier, it's
definitely. See, so this is actually where your words are coming to support my opinion right now, because they took out the part of the plank that said the Libertarian Party strongly denounces racism, bigotry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Pretty standard language. The Mises guys threw it out because they thought they didn't want any restriction on speech. They didn't want to exclude people. And listen, Andrea McCardle, if you see a Reason interview with her, she says, "What's a bigot? I don't know what a bigot is. Anybody can call someone else a bigot."
Gone. Technically, you're right. No argument for me.
Right.
But perception is not truth, but that is the truth we see.
Right. And that's what guys like Justin Amash said. Like, he goes, what purpose do you serve by taking that out? All you're doing is feeding into the concept. And by the way, Justin Amash, they asked him, do you think the Mises Caucus is bringing in these alt-right Nazis and whatnot, racists? And he said, no, I do not. I think they're just enthusiastic kids trying to make a name for themselves. But now he's changed his mind.
If you disagree with anything and you're white, you're just screamed at as a racist. So there's a lot of lies and BS out there that has nothing to do with race that people.
But I don't disagree.
Taking that out, they're giving the perception that it is about race.
Well, guess who wrote in to provide a compromise?
Dave Smith or Justin Amash?
No. Dave Smith was strictly Mises Caucus. And he supported
Justin Amash then, huh?
No. It was actually our old buddy Spike Cohen.
Oh, Spike Cohen. Okay.
So Spike Cohen put in some alternate plank. So he says, okay, we lost that vote. The Mises Caucus took over. They voted to take it out. But he says what he did is he put a coalition together to at least put this in. And I'm paraphrasing now, but it was basically saying the Libertarian Party believes – something along the lines that everyone should have the opportunity to succeed under the banner of freedom and liberty. In other words, he tried to phrase it in the positive. Like instead of saying we don't want racists, he tried to phrase it in his – right? He tried to face it. But the damage was done in the sense that this had already become a story.
You know, John, I hate to tell you, but one potential outcome that some of your elders may look at – when I talk about elders, maybe people –
there's a split.
Not a split, because you guys aren't enough of a party to really split and be effective. And I say that for two reasons. One, you guys in the Republican Party just don't seem to care enough to understand the importance of local election, and that's where you build your politicians from the ground up.
Right.
You always want to jump into the state or congressional
track. Right, right.
So you guys aren't spread out enough or big enough to make a difference. So a split would literally destroy you. But what I can see happen is people like you, not you, but people who are politically active, but with your mentality, just not getting involved, and the Mises Caucus slowly withers away and dies. Because at the end of the day, this is what I used to tell young entrepreneurs, especially after I showed KFFL, is – look, you may think you're hip, you know, with those sandals, with flats, that long hair, that goatee. But at the end of the day, every single person you're trying to get out of me to talk to, they're an old man who's white, who's wearing a suit. So eventually, you've got to play by their rules. And for Mises to grow, they're going to have to eventually come to an understanding of the political rules in place. Rich people don't become rich only to hear a snot-nosed, shit-faced kid tell them, this is what we're doing, and then the guy's going to give him money. No, it's a quid pro quo. And once, you know, if they don't learn that, they will wither away and die. You know, and your party may end up taking three steps back to move forward 5 steps. So that's an option. I would tell people who are 50 and over, you got to consider. You know, the Libertarian Party is not going to be anything in your lifetime. Maybe you can help replant some of the seeds out there. Or these Mises kids do smart enough. And the greatest example is Rand Paul versus Ron Paul. Ron Paul was the kid who withered away and died. 20 years, one bill passed. Libertarians would sit there and take their bottle and go home once he got knocked out of the election. Nothing was ever gained in terms of growing the party, and the data actually shows that. You guys aren't even at a solid 1% to 3% on a year-to-year. Now, I'm not saying that to hurt him. I'm saying it because that's what I truly believe, and I think the data backs it up. Then you look at Rand Paul. Rand Paul, for a little while, teetered on libertarian pure betrayal, how many looked at him. And some still do.
I do.
But see, you're a philosopher, so you don't count. You really don't, because you don't involve yourself in the party. You know, you may donate here or there, but you're that one vote that they would love to get you to vote regularly, and maybe you do, but you're not involved in helping build a new party.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking about the Rand Paul and the people who he's bringing to the party to kind of help influence. So if the Mises kids can become a Rand Paul, your party can grow into a viable party, because your way's dead. Your way has never worked, because it's a philosopher's way, and that's utopian fantasy, which I want to believe, but it won't happen. So you got to hope they grow and mature into understanding the political world.
Well, the Mises kids would be, as we've been calling them, would be aghast, because it really was Ron Paul and his campaigns, even though you say they amounted to nothing. Those were actually the seeds that were planted 25 years ago.
Yeah,
literally.
We don't know how long this is going to last, this Mises run. I mean,
I'm saying those kids
are so fragile.
I'm saying those are the kids that 10, 15 years ago were energized by Ron Paul's ideas, and they're the ones who are taking over right now. So,
I get that. But my point is still on point. At the end of the day, they're not growing the Libertarian Party right now. They're growing Blake Masters' campaign and these other Make America Great Again campaigns versus taking those little dollars they have and going, we got to find some quality Libertarian candidates that have a realistic shot and help them out.
Or the other one is take that money and fight the proper court cases.
Right, like exactly. The point being is, so to me, they're thinking like Ron Paul, and that's not thinking 2 to 3 steps ahead. But he aggravates the bleep out of me, because when I look at, I'm a results driven guy. I look at his actual results in 20 years of Congress, and then I look at the Libertarian Party, where it was when he started, where it was when he left. The growth is inconsequential, because it's not really enough to make an impact across the nation. Sure, a race here, a race there, but those are never a given. They're always the exception. Yeah. Because here's my issue with polling today, and why I say that is, look how messed up it was to Trump. And if you look back even earlier, you'll see certain cycles where the polling really was not spot on or even close in terms of the majority of these companies. So I look at this growth has got to be faster, it's got to be bigger, and you got to stick to your libertarian beliefs if that's who you are. You know, as a Republican, I'm like, I can see the logic, but as a libertarian, I would be aghast if I was you, you know, and I would be looking to challenge the Mises people with grooming other people. And that's where I think you guys may have an issue. Whereas Democrats or Republicans, there's always somebody mentoring somebody. There's always somebody with money wanting to get involved. Do you guys have enough of a minor league system outside of immature kids who have uncontrolled passion? And the reason I say that is Democrats have control passion. They know how to keep the young ones. The AOCs of the world are the true exception to the rule. But Republicans and Democrats, they know how to keep that energy tempered so it doesn't hurt the party. It seems like libertarians may not have that in place yet. And again, you guys are just such – look, 1970 people is a long time. But that party's never had a solid footing in terms of building itself up across the nation. You guys need a – Who are those, the Koch brothers? I never understood why they didn't, aren't they libertarians? I never understood why they didn't really put a lot of money into
EEI. They were large political contributors for a long time, and one of them, I think David, ran for vice president in the on the libertarian ticket in 1980 or 84, I forget. Well, first of all, one of them is dead, so that's one reason. But no, see, look, part of the problem also, and it's going to sound like whining, but it's actually just a fact. The two parties, not just libertarians, as soon as any party seems to be growing in the polls, even that 1-3% that you're talking about, all of a sudden the rules change. Like, and the example
that is true.
The example I mentioned here is, look, we were kind of enjoying. We were watching the Chrissy Mayer podcast because she was hosting a debate between Larry Hawkins, who is the Green Party candidate for governor of New York, and Larry Sharp, the Libertarian Party candidate. Why are they on a large-breasted female comedian's podcast instead of some serious venue? Because New York State, Andrew Cuomo's departing gift was to change the ballot access rules. Now, mind you, both Sharp and Hawkins had achieved ballot access in New York for their parties because of the results of the gubernatorial race in 2020. Meaning they got enough votes to say you have automatic ballot access.
You know, John, why the courts? I'm in total agreement with you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you guys are kind of screwed right now because y'all just don't have enough people involved. You know, we have too many philosophers, not enough doers. No,
well, it's not that, William. I get what you're saying.
Oh, no, it is that, because that's something every American, if you sat there and said, well, should this person be on the ballot? I guarantee you, most Americans, oh, yeah, sure. You know, there's a core group that can be galvanized to change this. That's the problem with the two-party corrupt system we have.
I agree.
But the only way we can change it is by growing our party.
I don't disagree with you, but what do you do, like, as a practical matter? You said you're a practical man.
You pray for the best.
Right, and they're suing them, but guess what happened? They're going to sue. They're going to win probably their court case, but it'll be after this election.
That's right. And that's purposely done that way.
Of course.
And I know the courts. See, to me, I would be hell on wheels. I'd be impeaching judges left and right. Because if I'm like a person, I'm like, no, judge, you're going to hear this freaking next week because there's an election 2 months from now. You're not going to allow this crap to be put 6 months or I'm going to impeach your ass. But we'll never do that. You know, there's no system or mechanism in place to really do that. But that, to me, is the responsibility of a judge and how they should look at each situation. Now, granted, that's practicality. In real life, you may have 6 months of murder cases stacked up. But still, there should be some kind of – I've always thought – I've never pushed it or even talked about it because it's so easily corruptible. There should be a series or an X amount of courtrooms just set up for political pratfalls like this because you're right. But at the end of the day – that's not the system that's in place. And that means you guys were caught with your pants down, just like conservatives are by the Republican Party all the time, just like progressives used to be back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s by the old guard. And it's just something to lesson learned. And you've got to battle. Because at the end of the day, here's my issue with conservatives and liberalism today. And there's a difference between a conservative. I'm not talking about a rhino, not about Never Trump, a conservative, is we'll always vote to do what's right. You know, a rhino, a Never Trumper, a progressive, they won't. They're going to vote for their ideology or beliefs that
influences
us. You know, so my point being is the battle becomes that much harder. But just like these polls we take that, oh, I'm a libertarian, you're going to get the same response. People would not buy that. In fact, I would argue, even though I would vote against it, is that just because you sign up to be in a race, most people will go, yeah, they should be on the debate stage then. I'm like, oh, bullshit, because that shit costs money.
Yeah, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about you had ballot access. You're running as – like Larry Sharp –
I'll give you various examples of how candidates get screwed. And at the end of the day, John, there is no answer except to try to galvanize the people. And again, that's why I go look in the mirror. When's the last time? Because you know what, John? I used to be one of those people. I used to loathe myself at times. I got involved. It took Obama to get me involved because I wanted to prove to people, hey, my grandmother, who was called the N-word, who's black, my Asian-looking cousins, my brown skin. I'm like, we are not who you're trying to tell us we are. So I wanted people to learn that, no, we are very diverse and we are not a monolithic culture.
Right.
You know, so I got involved. And maybe that makes me a bit of a hypocrite because not a hypocrite in the sense maybe high and mighty or on my throne. I don't care because the only way change is ever going to take place is for people to get involved. Again, I always jokingly say every man out there can tell you how big Kim Kardashian's ass is. But nobody, but they can't tell you about that school board decision that just approved the ability to bend your kid over and take her pants off. You know, it's we don't know about that, but we know about everything else. So my point is, our priorities, that's on us in the mirror. We got to look in the mirror, and I'm preaching to the choir because I'm sure you'll agree. But at the end of the day, 9 out of 10 Americans won't care, and they're gonna still keep staring at Kim Kardashian's butt while their little girls gets pulled down. You know, and it's terrible to say it like that, but that's kind of what's kind of happening in the public school systems now in some cases. Did you know New York City, I'm really digressing real quick. New York City is like one of the highest numbers of teachers who show up every morning to a classroom because they can't be fired, and ranging from everything from sexual assault of a minor to just not being a good teacher.
They're called rubber rooms.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right. That's right. But my point to you is, I'm sad to say, I don't see human nature changing. So this is one of those things that I don't know if it's going to be able to be changed. But if libertarians and the Green Party don't unite to help create this change, and the other smaller parties, then we are no better at challenging the system than we are supporting the two-party system. My point being, if we're not going to do anything as Americans and New York citizens, then we're getting kind of what we deserve, don't you think?
To some extent, you're right. But if the courts aren't part of the process of reform in these particular political cases, then it's always tough because, like, there's only so much war one can wage, especially on the individual level. So, like, you know, like I my heart goes out to Larry Sharp and to Howie Hawkins, even though I don't agree with them on anything. Because look, these guys really bled, their supporters bled. They went out and got the required signatures, they got the required money. And
right. That's the issue, John, is they did everything by the rules, and then the bullies changed the rules. Because they did it, because Mitt Romney did that to who in 2012?
I'm not sure who.
Ron Paul at the convention.
Ron Paul. Okay, yeah.
They changed the way the state's delegates and all were counted.
Right. Right.
Oh, that's what it was. The way it was set up, if I'm correct, he would have been allowed to have airtime or something like that. It had to do with him having a voice, and they wanted to mitigate that. You know, Mitt Romney taught me a lot. He opened my eyes to how truly corrupt human beings in the guise of God-giving people can be. Because that's what Mitt Romney is. He is a scum of the earth. And I don't care how many good things you've done, because when you've hurt as many people as he have, then that's between you and God. I judge you. and I live with the fact that God may look at you differently, but I don't. He's not a good man. And that, sadly, is what's representative. You may not have liked Trump, but that's what Trump was fighting. You know, Trump was the outsider, whether people want to admit it or not. And that's why everybody hated him. That's what was a pileup. Trump had no defenders except the people who actually voted for him and the people who were affected by him and his policies, you know? So sometimes we got to look in the mirror and admit who and what we are as well. And if we're going to stay on the sidelines, then we're getting what we deserve. Like California, we're getting what we deserve, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I think you're getting what you deserve in New York if you guys don't galvanize to change this. What are your thoughts?
I think to some extent now we've flipped roles, right? Like you're giving me the correct philosophical thing of like it's up to the people own their lives and this and that. The truth of the matter is
– I say that because it's doable and that's the only way to do it.
But I'm saying I don't disagree with you, but it you have to be willing to put up with so many short-term losses.
Yes, that is true.
That – people, it's designed to tire people out, you know, and it's like at some point you give up. And what happens is you say, you know, and that's why I said I have a lot of respect for Larry Sharp. The guy's been through so much. And by the way, his campaign is mostly self-funded and he's not a super wealthy man.
Oh, no, exactly. I know that. He's a smart guy, though. You know, so, John, I agree with you. You know what I lament? that we no longer have. You should tell people before the Industrial Revolution, there would be an actual civil war revolution every 50 to 100 to 200 years that would cleanse all this corruption and would start anew, because that's human nature. And power corrupts, and it corrupts absolutely. Once the Industrial Revolution started and then weapons of mass destruction were created, civilization has completely changed. And the governments we have are the governments are going to bring down the nations that they used to build because of the corruption of the people. It's no different than Rome. You know, Rome at the end of the day had every border, the eastern front, the western front, the northern front. They were being invaded by everybody because of the corruption. People don't realize the Roman army was no more. The Roman army was completely formed out at the fall of Rome. The point being is the people had quit. They had given up.
Right.
They got what they deserved, and that was the end of Rome and the greatness. You know, so that's human nature. And with that, Bijan, I would agree with you. Mark, the Mises Caucus should not have done anything unless they got something out of it. And even then, that should never be, or if they did get something, will never be known publicly. But they should be talking to these elders in back channels. Hey, this is what we got. What did you do for the party to grow it? Because that would be my take. As a young kid, I'm going to grow this party. And every time somebody challenges me, if I'm growing the party successfully, I'm going to throw that back in their face and shut them up. Because you can be an advisor, but you weren't winners. You know, you can learn from failure, do not make mistakes, but don't preach to me that this will work when you kind of failed at it. So right. The Mises Caucus, in their defense, they're in a position no one's really held. But then again, nobody kind of tried to take over the party as they did successfully. So it's going to be fun to watch, and I'll be watching through your eyes and picking your brain about it. I am fascinated by Dave Smith because of the quandary he's in with his background as a comedian. Because, again, I don't care what he thinks people should think. It's what people will think. And sheep are very easy to take out of context. It's easier to deliver an out-of-context message to a sheep than it isn't. So he's a fascinating figure. I'm no fan of Justin Amash. I think he's a nobody. He didn't accomplish anything. But he's a party leader. What I'm saying is he's earned his stature in the eyes of the party, and he has a voice in that party. I love Larry Sharp. I don't know Spike Cohen well enough in terms of seeing his work, but I love Larry Sharp because he's practical. He's my kind of – that's what I am. You call me a conservative. I just view myself as a practical American, you know. But then again, practicality plays a big part in life when you have two dictators you see maiming and killing and abusing your people.
I was going to say, I don't call you a conservative. You call yourself a conservative.
Oh, that's because at the end of the day, when you break it down, what am I really? And it's the most practical. At the end of the day, there may be things in the Libertarian Party I'm closer to, but I guess a confession, I just realized, I'm like you. I don't want to do all these endless battles, so I'm going to go to a party that has similar values as I do, but that is big enough that can actually make a difference. And again, for the audience, I told you maybe a week ago, maybe less, that it just clicked in my head. I do know Libertarians here in the Republican Party, and I asked them, why don't you have your own party? And they told me, well, we did. We tried. But we couldn't get anybody to come.
Right.
So he goes, so the few of us that did come, we decided to join the Republican Party and try to impart and try to educate some libertarian ways. That's what they told me. This isn't me making it up in the sense of, like, this is what I think they said.
Right.
That was their goal, to try to bring some libertarianism to the local San Diego Party. And they've kind of failed. They're like me right now on the outside looking in because we've kind of self-removed ourselves from the equation. Because you're right, John. You kind of get tired of losing the battle. And then when your allies are fundamentalists and they look at everything from the fundamentalist point of view, you're going to be battling with them, you know, too. So what?
That's true.
So what did we do? We just like, well, we're going to take a step back. Yeah. But I took a step back from this project and a couple others. I do hope to get back into politics one day because I could be the Latino wonder. Ladies and gentlemen, William Del Pilar, the Latino lover. Be the politician with the most mistresses.
There you go.
I say my goal is to be Bill Clinton Sr. Anyway, I'm just kidding. John, it's a great episode. You educated us. I apologize. I pushed back a little and digressed some of it. But I think it was a spirited debate. We do look at politics different, but I think we both understand each other's point of view. Whether we agree with it or not doesn't matter. We both understand that's how life works.
Sure. Yeah. That was the whole point of this.
And with that, Big John, any final words before I tell people where to go to catch the show?
No, I think we've talked enough. It's been at least 2 hours, I think, that we've been gabbing. So certainly you should find something to listen to in this podcast. But, no, go ahead. Do your promos, William.
Everybody, look, this is Fired Up, Episode 9. My original Episode 9 disappeared. But it's strange to see John on Fired Up. He's usually with the big questions or points on the board. But this is a political, and we have another political libertarian-style themed show lined up. So you can check this episode and my Trump episode, which is my most viewed Fired Up, and I think, don't quote me, but I think probably our most viewed video.
It might be.
It's a Trump one, and it's an hour and a half diatribe on its stats, facts, and my personal opinion. You can check those and find those at sportsgrumblings.com, rumble.com, YouTube, on podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or the Google platform, as well as Amazon. I think we're on Amazon too.
Yep, Amazon, and Spotify, everywhere.
And it's not just Fired Up. We have points on the board. We just had – it seems like politics and identity politics is our shtick the last couple of weeks, because our last point on the board, which is just went up a couple of days ago, we talked about the anti-Semitism between Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, Kyrie Irving, for those who don't know, big-time NBA player, and no black Americans playing in the World Series. It's – politics, sports, and politics, John, have delved into one in many ways. But you can find those as well as John's libertarian library he's building, Big Questions with Big John, that right now has Spike Cohen, Larry Sharp, Bob Zadig. I was going to say Zadig, and even Matt Nagin, another comedian, who's John would sit there saying he's probably more of a libertarian Trumper.
He's a Trumper.
But at the end of the day, he's one of your guys, and y'all need all the help you can get. And with that, America, thank you for joining in. We shall catch you on the next go round. This is William Del Pilar, the conservative Latino, with Fired Up, and we are out. Good night, America.
Good night.